WIP.
On a sad night that we lose a Philadelphia legend, and Kwame Brown, I will try to cheer you up through the evening. I'm Spike Eskin. How are you? I know we all like to spend the evening talking about Kwame, but I think there are more important things to do. By the way, Sixers lose again, and if you're worried about them winning too many games, you need worry no more. Do not worry. Get ready to complain that they lose too many games. On to more important things here. An important thing happened with the Eagles on Sunday. More important than just winning a game, more important than just winning a division game, more important than taking the lead in the NFC East. The Eagles did something on Sunday that separates them significantly from what I believe they were before. The Eagles on Sunday proved to me that they are an actual, real, legitimate, good football team in the NFL. I believe there are four levels of teams in the NFL currently. There are the elite teams. That is Seattle, Denver, maybe New Orleans or Carolina. The top level, the very, very top, no doubt about it, these are good teams. There are the good teams. That is Detroit, San Francisco, the winning level teams, the level below elite. Then the biggest group that the Eagles were in previously, the muck, the middle that everybody's in, Indianapolis, Chicago, Oakland, Cincinnati, Arizona. These teams could all win or lose to each other every single week. The Giants are now in this group. The Cowboys are now in this group. The sort of team that when your team faces this team, you don't know if they're going to win or lose. They're the same every week, and they're different every week. They're bad, but they're not really, really bad. And then there's the bottom of the NFL. They're the horrible teams, Jacksonville, Atlanta. The Eagles before were in that third level. Now, the difference between the middle and the good, the main difference, and this is what Andy Reid was an expert at, actually, is beating the teams that you're supposed to beat, winning the games that you're merely supposed to win. When you're playing a team that you believe you're a superior team, then you win that game. And what the Eagles did on Sunday against Washington is they won that game. That was a spot that they could have lost. That was a team they could have lost to. Washington comes in with a supposed good offense, with RG3 coming in, playing better, a bad defense. But a division game, you've already won one game. It's a revenge game. They could have lost that game. They actually even could have blown it at the end. The Eagles didn't lose that game. The Eagles are now a team, having won three in a row, having an offense that is probably a top three offense in the NFL with, by the way, a backup quarterback. They have a defense that is now maybe not good, but at least standard, at least legitimate. They have this offense, by the way, with not only that quarterback, not only the second choice at quarterback, but they have, what, one legitimate wide receiver? The second wide receiver is a guy that we didn't even think should be on the team 8 weeks ago. The third wide receiver, in Jay Savant, is basically cooked. This offense, if you had this personnel with any other team in the NFL, I don't know if this would happen, but it's happening here. They have a coach who is proving that not only he belongs in the NFL, but may actually be one of the better coaches in the league in his first year of the NFL. A coach that very well could be a coach of the year candidate. He's got to be. If the Eagles go from four wins to winning this division, not only four wins, but a disaster last year and winning the division. Not only that, but with essentially the same personnel that they had last year. Basically a draft and some middling free agents. They have a quarterback right now who week after week, against my better judgment, is getting the job done. I'm starting to trust the Eagles. I'm at a spot with them with six wins, with five games left, that I think nine wins is sort of a given, and I think they could actually win 10. So I believe now that the Eagles are not in that middle group. I believe the Eagles are a good team, not a top-of-the-line team, not Seattle, not Denver, not Super Bowl level, but good team that could actually win a playoff game. Not only that, I think they could actually, with that game being at home, I think that playoff game they could be favored in. I think if San Francisco keeps heading the way they're heading, they could be favored in that playoff game. So I want to know, where are you with the Eagles? Do you trust them? You know, I think we always had that edge the last 5 years of the Andy Reid era, where we didn't really trust them. Even when they were playing well, even when they were scoring points, there was something about it. We didn't really trust them. Do you trust the Eagles? Do you trust that they're going to beat the teams that they should beat? When Arizona comes in here in a week and a half, and Arizona's a decent team, but a team that the Eagles should beat, do you trust that the Eagles are going to take care of business? Are they in that level where they not only luck into the playoffs, but they deserve to be in the playoffs? I think they're there. I think we can start expecting winning a playoff game. I think we can start expecting winning the division, not just, you know, middling at 8-8 and happening to win the division. So I want to know where you are with that. 888-729-9494 is the Xfinity voice line. And speaking of the quarterback of the football team, Nick Foles. I feel like I have been talking about Nick Foles for 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, somewhere around there. And what I hear a lot on Twitter, what I hear a lot when I'm here, is that people want me to admit I was wrong about Nick Foles. With every completed pass, with every touchdown pass, with every win, I get a tweet, I get a call, I get an email, I get a text message. Are you ready to admit you were wrong about Nick Foles? I will do nothing of the sort. I was wrong about one thing with Nick Foles. Here is the point I was wrong about. I believed at one point that Michael Vick was a better choice for starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles than Nick Foles, and I was not right about that. I was wrong. Nick Foles is the better choice than Michael Vick. It was, you know, it happened by injury, and he stayed and he competed, and Nick Foles deserves to be the starting quarterback of the football team. But what I will not sit here and do is say that that has any bearing on the future of the football team. I don't think that has any bearing on the next 3 to 5 years of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I don't believe that I have to sit around and wait and see about Nick Foles. I can enjoy watching these games and still think that they can do better at that position. I don't understand the whole notion of why can't you just sit back and enjoy it? You know, you're sitting back and enjoying these games, right? Don't you think they could do better in the secondary? As well as the defense is playing, don't you think they could do better at cornerback than Kerry Williams? Don't you think they could do better at safety than Nate Allen and Patrick Chung, right? Even though you're enjoying the games, you can still enjoy the games, enjoy the wins, and objectively think that they can do better at certain positions. So why can't I watch these games and think they can do better at other positions? The fact is, when you see Nick Foles running, he's going to get himself killed running. He's going to get himself killed because one of the things about being able to run is being able to get out of the way and being able to get out of bounds. And he can't do that. He's going to get crushed. And the fact that he's running at all shows that Chip Kelly wants to run with the quarterback. And the fact is, I'm still not impressed with his arm. Was I wrong about Nick Foles? I was wrong in that he's better than I thought he was. He's doing just about as well as anyone could have imagined and better. And I'm excited to see him play the rest of the year. I'm excited to see what the Eagles are doing right now. But I do believe that Chip Kelly will go and draft a quarterback. I don't have much of a doubt in my mind that he'll go ahead and draft a quarterback. And Nick Foles has not done much to change my mind on that. And the final note about the NFL this year is more less about the Eagles in particular and more about the NFL in general. The NFL's ratings are higher than they've ever been. Ever been. Fantasy football, a bigger deal than it's ever been. We have 500 Eagles beat reporters in Philadelphia for a team that was 4-12 last year. They may finish 500 this year. But do you remember the dot-com bubble? You remember that whole thing? You remember when people were making millions of dollars off of internet startups, right? But there was something wrong. There was something wrong, and it was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But as big as it was still very close to that ledge. I feel like there's something going on with the NFL where I feel like they are like the dot-com bubble. I get the sense that this success that the NFL is having is on very, very, very shaky ground. And I think it's less about the hits and things like that and more about the NFL, that the play in the National Football League is terrible. The quality of the football week to week, game to game, is not very good. The middle teams aren't as good as the middle teams were 20 years ago, and the best teams sure as hell aren't as good as they were 20 years ago. The play is bad. It's getting worse. The officiating is bad. I mean, think about this. How bad must the NFL be if you really never have any idea of who's going to win the Super Bowl? and you do have an idea of who's going to win the Super Bowl, and that team doesn't do it. It's because the teams aren't good. Thursday night football and watering down of the product is helping to ruin the NFL. Taking away padded practices and taking away the ability of these guys to get more reps in is helping to ruin the NFL. Parity is helping to ruin the NFL. Dynasties are good for teams and for leagues, and the best teams winning are good. You have something to measure your team against. There's nothing to measure the Eagles against right now. Denver's not that good. That's the best team in the NFL. The hard cap, free agency, all helped ruin the NFL. The inability to enforce the same rules the same way every week is helping to ruin the product. How many times a year are we going to hear about a coach that didn't know about a specific rule or didn't know about a change year to year? That's not because the coaches aren't doing their jobs. It's because they're changing the rules too much. I'm all for protecting players, but if you saw that hit on Drew Brees and you think that's a $15,000 hit, you're crazy. Think about the NFL as you were growing up. Think about those great teams. Where have those teams gone? Who are you gunning for? The 85 Bears, is there a team as good as that team? Those 49ers teams with Joe Montana and Steve Young, is there a team that's as good as those teams? The 90s Dallas Cowboys, the Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Michael Irvin, Shane Novacek, all those guys that they were able to keep on the same team year after year after year. Is there a team in the NFL that is as good as those teams? There aren't. The last great team like that was the undefeated Patriots. They ended up, by the way, losing in the Super Bowl. Since then, I feel like the NFL has gotten worse and worse and worse every year. The Ravens won the Super Bowl last year, not a good team. The Giants team at 9-7 that won the Super Bowl, not a good team. There's a very distinct possibility that whoever wins the Super Bowl this year could not be that good a team. Ravens, people talk about the Ravens defense last year. The defense wasn't that good. Joe Flacco is showing you what he is this year. I have real worries about the NFL, and I'd love to know if you, in 5 years, are you going to be watching the NFL, if it is the same product or even potentially worse than it is, are you still going to be watching as much NFL football as you do today? Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. I want to know if the Eagles are good. I want to know if you believe in the NFL, if you believe in the future of the league, the way it's heading. My name is Spike Eskin, 94 WIP Sports Times, 10:15.
It's the bye week.
And some here.
Touchdown!
Sports Radio 94 WIP.
I love those A-Rod quotes. A-Rod. A-Rod is a hero, man. A-Rod is my hero. I'm Spike Eskin. As well, I have a pair of Temple football tickets for you to go see Temple UConn November 23rd, a primetime showdown. Temple will battle UConn on Saturday, November 23rd, 7 p.m. at Lincoln Financial Field. Bring a canned food item to the box office on game day and save money on tickets. Plus, kids can score a touchdown on the field after the game. Visit owlsticks.com. I'll give those away a little later. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Talking about the Eagles and whether you think they're actually good, I think they're trustworthy. I know we haven't seen a huge sample size of the Eagles, but there is a vibe I'm getting. I just feel like it's building. There's something about the Eagles that builds every week. I did not trust at all after the Oakland game at all because I think that team stinks. In fact, I think probably, you know, the Packers without Aaron Rodgers stink and the Washington Redskins stink as well. But there is something about the Eagles beating teams that they should beat that is making me trust them. I think the division is probably a lock. It's probably a lock. And the NFL, we're talking about whether the NFL is going to be something that you're going to be as interested in 5 or 10 years. I just think the product, I love watching football. I love the NFL, but I just don't think the product is as good as it's been. Brock in Harleysville, you're on 94 WIP. Brock, do you think the NFL is as good as you remember?
You know what, Spike? First of all, first-time caller, long-time listener. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, buddy.
Not a problem. Yeah, as far as NFL is concerned, I think that I'm still going to be interested in watching the games in like 5 to 10 years. Well, when I think back like 5, 10 years ago, watching NFL, there was a big, big change. And with all these rules and regulations they're implementing, in the last 5 years, is basically they're trying to make it more entertaining than more like smash mouth, let's break each other's necks type of game versus like high scoring and you know, let's protect the wide receivers and let's protect the quarterback, let's run up the score. And they're trying to get more people interested and get more audience that way, I think. So I think that actually made the quality of the football drop down a lot, because now you're not having people kind of going at it maybe like they used to, where, you know, you see people hitting each other 5 years ago and nothing happening. But
yeah, you know, it's interesting, Brock. I have been one that has I've always said that I don't think the hits that they've taken away, that they've tried to take away, the helmet-to-helmet stuff, and leading with your head stuff, I've always said before that I think that players over time should be able to adapt to that. But what's interesting is that the changes that you've mentioned that they've made for more offense to happen and that kind of stuff, you would think that we would see more offenses that are fun to watch. You know, if every game was like that, was that Dallas-Denver game, the 51-48 game, I'd love football like that. I don't care if they're scoring a lot of points. It just feels like even when there's a lot of offense, the offense is sloppy. It's not even, it was really good that night, but I even feel like when there's a lot of offense, the offense isn't even that good.
Well, Spike, can I ask you a quick question? Maybe you can look this up after I hang up. Did the scoring actually go up since they started implementing those rules, or is it the same, or is it down?
I'm sure it's gone up. I'll get the numbers for you exactly, but
right,
I'm sure it's gone up. Yeah. All right, thanks for the call, Harley. Yeah, I'm sure the numbers have gone. But I think, and maybe this is, it's sometimes it's hard to match up the numbers with what you're seeing, you know? And I understand, like, I can look analytically at the numbers and see that more points are being scored. But I'm telling you, when I'm watching NFL football games, I don't see impressive. I look at the Eagles and I see an offense that impresses me. You know, I look at Denver, I see an offense that impresses me. I see the Chargers. You know, when I watch the Chargers, that offense is really, really good. But you know, when you see the Pittsburgh Steelers scoring as many points as they scored last week, and that Pittsburgh offense is terrible. Even the Colts with Andrew Luck, I watch that offense, I'm not impressed by it. You know, the Cowboys have shown something here and there. The Lions are impressive at times and aren't impressive at times. The Saints can be impressive. But I just don't think that there's even the teams that are scoring a lot of points, there's not a ton of those teams that are really, really exciting to watch. I don't feel like we're seeing a ton of those exciting, high-scoring games. You know, if it was like arena football, you know, if every game was 60 to 58, I think that would be exciting. But I don't think we're seeing that either. Chris, in media, you're on 94 WIP. What do you think? Is the NFL as good now as it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago?
I think the trouble is that if you take safety into account, and with that, there's some of what people think the glory days of football is lost. It's way too important to protect the safety of guys. I think in that, a lot of guys who are saying that football has changed, that the NFL's watered down, is that they've never played a game of football. Any thoughts on that?
Well, what... Please, I understood the first part of your point, but I don't understand what playing football has to do with thinking the quality's watered down. Could you connect those two for me?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think these guys have to, I mean, what we have to understand is that these guys have to live their lives after they're done playing football.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you. What I was trying to say is that I don't really think the hitting thing is what has made the quality any worse. I feel like the play is less crisp. You know, I feel like the guys aren't playing as well. I agree with you. You know, people are saying that, you know, it was tough and it's a tough game and they know what they're getting into. Look, when you're 20 years old or even when they start playing football, when they're 10 years old, you're not thinking about what's my brain going to be like when I'm 45. And even when, you know, I remember when I was 20, I wasn't thinking what my brain was going to be like when I was 45. You know, I made a ton of decisions. If I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have made those decisions. So I think on some level, it's the job of the league, it's the job of us as a society to sort of make rules to protect people. So I want their heads to be protected. But I still think it's possible to play the game well and protect them the same way. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying to find where the disconnect is.
I understand that, but I think it's more than just it's more than hits the head. It's knees, it's backs, it's being able to get out of bed and live a life.
Yeah.
Well, you know, do you think
that's the problem is that football in general is too dangerous a sport, and that the league, you know, and that football can't be played at that high a level while protecting these guys? Is that where it is for you?
I'll tell you what, I grew up my entire life playing football, and that's the thing is I think that people don't realize it's a sport that is it's hard to translate what they do every single day, or it's hard to do that every single day and practice hard every day and have full contact camp and do all of those things and still have the game that everybody, you know, has become watered down a little bit. Why is that? It's not just head-to-head contact. It's not concussions that are causing that. And it's not going to be the same sport that we thought it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever it is. It's not the, you know, smash mouth, guys run into each other. I think the sport in general is changing overall.
Right. Well, college, it could be.
College all the way down.
Thank you for the call, Chris. I appreciate it, man. Good points. I think it could be. It could just be that the sport is in a transition period. You know, everyone talking about what the sport will become is this high scoring, you know, points, fast game without those big hits. Maybe we're going to be at a quality version of that in 5 years as the players who continually come into this league are learning at a younger age how to play the sport, how it's going to be played. But Chris brings up a good point, whether this sport in general at the level that we've grown accustomed to can be played while keeping these guys as safe as we'd like to keep them. You know, does the NFL end up becoming some kind of renegade sport where there's fewer talented guys in there? Because I'll tell you what'll happen is these great athletes that are becoming, whether it's a quarterback or a running back or wide receiver or a cornerback, these, you know, forget about the guys that are on the offensive and defensive line, because the sports that they're going to play professionally are pretty limited. You know, I don't think a 6'8", 360-pound guy, though he'd be something to see in the NBA, I don't know that those guys really have an option to play a different sport. But those high-skill guys, the skill guys in the NFL, the wide receivers, the quarterbacks, the running backs, the cornerbacks, even the safeties to a certain extent, the kick returners, are those guys at a younger age going to continue to go to football? Or are those guys just going to go to a different sport? Are those guys just going to go to playing basketball, to playing baseball, to playing soccer, to playing hockey? Are there more options for those guys? And is the league going to change in that way? You know, Chris brings up a lot of good points in that respect, in that the sport that we have grown up watching is changing. And the biggest question is what are we going to accept as a sport? What are we going to accept as the NFL? If we need those big hits and we need that helmet-to-helmet stuff and all that, then I think eventually we're just going to lose talented people and the sport will change. There'll be different people in the sport. Or we accept the change in the NFL. We accept how the sport is changing. And, you know, and there are just fewer hits, and that in 5 or 10 years that we start seeing 60 to 57 games and it starts looking more like a video game. To be honest, looking like a video game, I don't know, I love video games. I wouldn't really have a problem if the NFL was like a video game, but it's just a matter, I guess, of expectations. 888-729-9494 is the Xfinity voice line. I want to know if you think the quality of the NFL is something that you want to continue watching. Because I'll tell you what, man, I watch Thursday Night Football, or Andrew's going to talk a bit about Monday Night Football. Think about what Monday Night Football matchups used to be. I mean, those matchups used to be great. They've been, aside from this past Monday, they've been atrocious every week. #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Scott also wants to talk about the future of the NFL, and Kitty wants to talk about the Sixers. We'll always talk about, obviously, we have to eulogize Kwame Brown. I'm Spike Eskin. 94 WIP Sports Time is 10:30.
94 WIP.
My name is Spike Eskin. Xfinity voice line, 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Talking about the NFL, where you think the quality of the game is. What, what, you know, a lot of people have brought up the big hits being taken away. I don't necessarily think that's not exactly what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about growing up and watching, you know, 3 yards in a cloud of dust every week and guys walking away with bloody mouths. I don't know that necessarily we need that. And that, I think it's a good thing that guys are not, you know, that they're worrying about concussions and they're worrying about the future of these players. My point is that the best teams are no longer as good as they were. And the middle, which is what most of the NFL is full of slop. Thursday night football cheapens the product. It waters down the product. You know, I feel like I've seen so many 4 o'clock games this year that have been embarrassing. Monday night football, this week was a great Monday night football game. But I, man, in my teens, in my 20s, Monday night football was a good Monday night football game was not the exception. It was the rule. So what I'm telling you is that the quality, I don't think is as good. I think it is partially the top teams not being as good. You know, I mentioned the 49ers and the Montana and Young 49ers, the Aikman Cowboys, even the first half of the Brady. I mean, it was as good as recently as the first half of the Brady Patriots when they were winning Super Bowls. I think it's unlikely that we'll see a dynasty type team like that. And a lot of times people complain about dynasties. I think dynasties are great. Dynasties give you things to aim for. They give you a villain. You know, when those Dallas Cowboys were good in the 90s, you hated them, but their existence was necessary. That great team that everybody hates, that the existence of those teams is necessary. That's good for the sport. Without that, you know, the Ravens coming in and winning as not that good a team, the Giants not that good a team, the Packers team that won the Super Bowl not that good a team, certainly not as good as those Cowboys teams, those Niners teams. I think a lot of it has to do with the hard cap. I think a lot of it has to do with the hard cap and free agency and teams not staying together as long as they were. I mean, I think that's reflected in college basketball as well. Not seeing teams as together as long results in worse basketball there, just like I think it results in worse football in the NFL. Xfinity voice line, 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Andrew in Bucks County, you're on 94WIP. How do you feel about the play of the NFL right now?
Although I don't like it as much, and by the way, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Because I don't like it as much now as I did growing up doesn't mean it'll still be forever my favorite sport in the world. But I'm only 23 years old, and I grew up when football was king of the world. And a couple of things took change for me. One, of course, when they started changing all the rules in football. But the other point I wanted to make is when all the TV contracts started running out and ABC lost Monday Night Football, I grew up watching Michaels and Madden. All the best games were on Monday night, and you actually look forward to that game every single week. I watched primetime growing up dominate on Monday Night Football. I believe Brett Favre, the day his father passed, threw 5 touchdowns on Monday Night Football. I mean, all the best moments growing up were Monday Night Football. Now they're junk games, along with the Thursday night games. I wish they would do away with the Thursday night games altogether. But
you know what? The Thursday night games, I'll let you finish. The Thursday night games are a travesty. They're awful. And even the players don't come out against much with the league because nobody wants to get fined. But every player will tell you that they basically don't get. Connor Barwin was saying one day, you basically don't get to practice on a Thursday night game because you play Sunday, then you get your one off day. If you're away, you get a travel day, which is Wednesday. So basically, you're getting one day to game plan for a football game when normally you'd have 2-3 days. I mean, that's a huge difference.
Yeah, I don't think it's fair. It's just another element that brings another type of advantage or disadvantage to a team. Football is such a strategic game. You got to watch film for days, study every aspect of the team you're playing. You need a rest day. You need a day to run new plays, implement a new offense. And like you said, if you're going road game to road game, you're not practicing one day. Either that, or you're not resting one day. And either way, that's not fair to either team. And and on top of that, like you said, they're junk games. And so is Monday Night Football now. To be honest, I don't even watch them most nights. I got to get up earlier. They're not even worth. I mean, I watched last week's game, but they're not even worth my time watching these games. And it's a shame.
Yeah, I'll tell you, a lot of that has to do, thank you for the call, Andrew, I appreciate it. A lot of that has to do with growing up. Man, I'll tell you, keeping up with sports and getting older, is a hard combination, man. I mean, single guy in my 20s when that was happening and I was working at night, man, watching sports was easy. You start getting up at 5 a.m. and I'm engaged and, you know, sometimes you're there are nights that you can't watch the game. It gets tougher as you get older. But I think what you mentioned about Monday Night Football not being the same sort of must watch as it was sort of reminds me of the World Series. Man, when I was growing up, it didn't matter who was in. Baseball is a totally different thing because baseball has definitely become more provincial. Because when I was younger, I remember when the World Series was on, I would watch the World Series no matter who was in the World Series. I didn't care who was in. I wanted to watch it. Now, if the Phillies aren't involved in it, my interest level drops by a lot, by a huge percentage. Scott and Rockley, you're on 94 WIP. How are you feeling about the NFL right now?
I think the NFL is really watered down now. I mean, you know, take, for instance, you know, what the NFL players are allowed to do. They can't speak out against a ref. They can't speak out against anything. Tom Brady sat in that press conference after he was berating the refs coming off the field, and they said, well, what did you say to the refs coming off the field? Nah, I didn't say anything. I mean, the refs make bad calls, but these guys are scared to death to say anything bad about a ref. They're afraid of anything. They're afraid, you know, the defensive players running in to make a tackle, pulling up thinking, you know what, if I hit this guy the wrong way, it costs me $50,000. So the defenses have laxed in things. That's why you've got these guys running across the middle and making, you know, having 400 or 500-yard games because the defensive backs are afraid to hit anybody.
Well, I'll tell you, I think part of it is nobody knows. They've changed. I think part of it is that they are in a – I think a little bit they're in a flux point in the NFL where a lot of the players don't even know what the rules are anymore, you know, and I think they're trying to
figure it's ruined the game.
Well, I think that is one thing that I think could change over time. I think that's a process. I agree with you that it's hurting them now because and you know that I don't know if you watched the San Francisco New Orleans game with that hit on Breeze that basically cost San Francisco the game. And basically the hit was the guy was taller than Drew Breeze and he basically ended up with his arm around his neck and it ended up being a penalty and a $15,000 fine. But, you know, that was, I think part of it is that I think the refs are unsure of the rules. I think the coaches are unsure of the rules and I think the players are unsure of the rules. And I think
when they play scared.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Another thing that really cheapens the sport for me, to be honest with you, is after every single play, everybody's looking for a flag.
Yeah, they are.
It turned into the crybaby league. I mean, seriously, you get touched running. I mean, you've got a wide receiver that's sitting there pounding on the defensive back the whole way down the field, and the defensive back intercepts it. You're screaming, you know, he interfered with me. I mean, I think it's great when the refs let him play.
Yeah.
They're going down through, and they're both pushing and shoving, and they let him play. That's awesome. But, I mean, every single play, they're looking for a flag. And, I mean, you have a lot of these guys that will, like, get intercepted, and the receiver, instead of going after the guy that just intercepted the ball, he'll stand there and turn around and look for a ref for a flag. Play the damn game. Come on, guys. Seriously. I mean, they give up too easily on the plays.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thank you for the call, Scott. Yeah, the wide receivers are incorrigible with the asking for the flags. It's wide receivers and quarterbacks, man. You give them an inch, they want a yard now because you started making the rules in favor of the wide receivers and the quarterbacks, and now they want every rule. I'll tell you, he brings up a point about the refs too. I mean, that's an entirely different rap with instant replay. And, you know, I was watching the Ravens. What was the game that went into overtime a couple weeks ago? It was the Ravens-Bengals. And I was just watching the coin flip before overtime and watching these refs. And there are three refs there, and two of them had to be at least 60 years old. And here we have the biggest, strongest, fastest, most skilled football players in the world playing the game faster and harder than it's ever been played. And here we have these guys in their 60s, you know, five of them standing on the field and trying to judge what happens every play. I mean, how hard can it be to just make that job a really high-paying job, make it really something that somebody wants to get. And all of a sudden, maybe you get Division I players that can't make the NFL. Maybe they want to go to ref academy so they can make $400,000 to be $400,000 a year to be a ref. I want to see guys in their 20s and 30s, maybe their 40s, these old, out-of-shape guys reffing NFL games. And don't even get me started on instant replay, because instant replay is a whole other issue. You can't half-ass instant replay the way that they've done it, because the refs are unsure how to make every call. I think that's a problem, too. They got to figure out a way to fix. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, pound 9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. I'm Spike Eskin, 94 WIP Sports. Time is 1055.
WIP.
Hour number two of the Spike Eskin program, as if that matters to you, which hour of the show it is. I'm Spike Eskin. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, pound 9494 to AT&T and Verizon cell. A little bit later, I'm going to talk about A-Rod. I think I have a bit of a, I feel like the A-Rod audience has definitely become more split than it used to be. I think the world used to be 98% against A-Rod, 2%. Maybe couldn't care less. Nobody pro A-Rod. But I feel like it's gone to only 75% anti A-Rod. I think people are a little, I think you persecute somebody enough, like you push somebody against the wall enough that people will start to side with that guy. And A-Rod a little bit picked on, a little bit. So get into that a little bit later. I still want to know if you trust the Eagles. I am at a point, and I am not a sucker. I am not a sucker. It takes a while. I think they finish with 9 or 10 wins. I'm not thinking 8-8. I'm thinking 9-7, 10-6. And to think back to when they were 3-5. When this team was 3-5, could you have ever imagined them winning that? They couldn't score a touchdown. They didn't score an offensive touchdown for 2 games. And of course, we're talking about the NFL. And if you think the product is as good as it was 10 years ago, even 20 years ago for sure, but 10 years ago, I don't think it is. I think you can point to the top. The thing that bothers me the most is seeing bad teams win the Super Bowl. And that Ravens team last year was not good. The Giants team that won the Super Bowl a couple years ago, not good. That Packers team went on a nice little run, but those teams that were good 10 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, were good the entire season, not just for a good 6-week stretch at the end of the year. So 888-729-9494. Chris in Williamstown, you're on 94 WIP. What do you think of the state of the NFL?
Hey, first off, Spike, thanks for taking my call. I have to kind of piggyback on what the last caller said about, the game has become watered down. I think, and you know what, I'll even go back further than 20 years ago. I go back to Joe Namath and watching little, clips that are still available on, the days when Namath was around. You don't see as many pads as you do now. And I think that the game has come a long way, and Kurt Warner is one of the big contributors to trying to make this a safer game. But I'm going to go back to the Redskins and the Packers game. And I don't know if you remember the hit I'm talking about where the one defender went real low on one of the Green Bay Packers guys and sidelined the Packer for a while. I think, to a certain degree, I think the league has become too critiqued. I think people are looking at these hits now and are overanalyzing how if he intended to do it, if he did it on purpose, and people are afraid to get fined. I mean, now the whole bounty thing with the Saints, that's one thing. But to tell a player that, you hit him too low, or you hit him, you brought up the guy wrapping his arm around Drew Brees, it's just, can we really avoid this totally, or is this never going to go away?
I think that's a good question, Chris. I think that is one part of it. I think it contributes to the sloppiness of the game. I think NFL football is more sloppy now, in part because guys don't know. I think it's a learning process for the refs. I think it's a learning process for the players and the coaches. And look, some of these players that have been in the NFL for 8, 9, 10 years, I don't know that they, even 5 years, I don't know if they can change. You grow up playing football one way, then you get into the league playing one way, and all of a sudden they take it out from under you. And I think that's why so many of the players are anti these rule changes. But I think that part will change. I think that part will get better. I think it's more than that. You know, I think the quality, I don't think the teams are as good. I don't think the good teams are as good. I do think that them not knowing where to tackle a guy, I think that hurts, and I think they'll have to learn that. But I don't think that's something that the NFL can't recover from. That part of it, I think, can work. Jeff, you're on 94 WIP. What are you thinking about the NFL?
Hey, Spike. I guess two thoughts I wanted to put out there for you. One is the rules hurt me with today's football. If you're a quarterback and you sneak the ball over the goal line, as long as you cross that plane, it doesn't matter if the ball gets whacked away. You don't have to complete a football move. It's a touchdown. But if you're a receiver, you could have possession 2 feet down, but as you go to the ground, if the ball squiggles a little bit on the turf, it's not a touchdown. Like, what does possession mean?
Well, I'll tell you, that goes into the officiating. Is, look, here's the problem with instant replay and officials on the field. The problem is that I feel like it's got to be either all the way, and we are looking at every play on every camera, and the only function of those officials is guys with earpieces telling you what the call should be, or we take away all the replay and just let them call it. But the problem is that they're so unsure of what call to make, and here's the other thing, and the replay of the call is so based on what the original call is. You know what I mean? Like, they need to be able to overturn it, and you know, they have like some sort of definition of what you need to overturn the call. You know, if we have the technology to just watch it all on these screens and tell what those calls are immediately and radio down to them, then I'd rather do that than spend 5 minutes after every play trying to figure out whether the ball bounced partially on the ground, partially on the guy's hand. I feel like we're overusing the technology just because we have it.
And you're removing the authority of the official on the field completely.
Exactly.
My other point is what's really changed the game for me. This isn't necessarily on the field, but off the field, and what people care about. It's all about fantasy football. You know, I have a fantasy football league. Dads and kids, a bunch of 10-year-olds and 11-year-old sons of ours. They don't know who made the hand. They don't even care who wins. It's all about who scored the touchdowns, who's going to get the carries, who's on waivers. It's a completely different way of looking at the game that's on the field. And I think that's the priority. That's going to the fans' priority going forward. I don't think it's the violence anymore.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jeff. Thank you for the call. Fantasy football is the, if you don't think fantasy football is helping to carry the NFL at this point, you're crazy. I mean, fantasy football, I would hazard to put a percentage on, you know, on how responsible it is for the NFL's growth, but it's huge. And don't kid yourself. Fantasy football is gambling. Fantasy football is another way of gambling. The only people that really, really enjoy fantasy football are the people that have money on it. And these daily and week, or it's not daily in football, it's daily in baseball or basketball, but weekly fantasy football leagues that you know, and I'm sure some even advertise on this station, but the weekly fantasy football leagues where you know, it's $10 and you can win however much it is, that's gambling too. Gambling has always been an enormous part of the success of professional sports in general, but football most notably. Gambling has all, and this is just another opportunity for people to gamble, and in this case it's legal and it's easier and it's more accepted, and I think it's really interesting how it will change the culture of how people cheer for teams, because you find people growing, you know, younger people growing up, I feel like it's been this way in the NBA for a while now, and I'm not sure, maybe it's just because it's more young people, I feel like people are are growing up and having, they'll have less allegiance to teams. You know, the home team will not, if fantasy football is more important, if your fantasy football team is more important to you than the home team is, then that will be more important to you moving forward. Then you're going to care less about the Eagles winning, and you're going to care more about whatever team you have is winning. Keith in Levittown, you're on 94 WIP.
Hi, Spike.
Keith.
Glad to talk to you again.
You too, man.
I definitely disagree with expanding the season as far as the NFL.
Oh, you mean to more games or more teams?
To more games, mainly.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's coming.
Well, it probably is, but yeah. it's like, okay, you're concerned about the concussion thing. Well, you expand the number of games. And these guys, they're getting worn out. And then it's like they're going to get hammered even more. It could have more of an effect.
Yeah, I agree with you, Keith. I actually think one of the things that they should do is that it, rather than adding another game, is adding another week so they can add another bye week. I think the only way to have those Thursday night games be decent is by adding a second bye week, and every team that plays a Thursday night game has a bye week the week before, you know, so they have 10 days to prepare rather than only having 3 days to prepare. But I agree with you. Them adding, you know, another game without adding more roster spots, I think is dangerous too. And it's not just heads. It's not just concussions. You know, thank you for the call, Keith. Everybody talks about concussions and head injuries. Man, again, I don't know the numbers on this, but it doesn't seem like there's more ACL blowouts than there's ever been before. Guys tearing their ACLs. Jeremy Maclin tearing his ACL on nothing. These guys aren't tearing their ACLs on contact. This isn't, you know, this isn't things where they're getting, where guys are getting hit and tearing ACLs. A lot of these ACL tears are guys planning the wrong way. I think that has to do with the guys are, you know, when you're strengthening yourself, when you're getting bigger and stronger and faster, there are certain things that you can make stronger. You know, you can make your muscles stronger. You can make your cardiovascularly, you can get stronger. You can, you know, your breath, your heart, all those things can get better. But the tendons and the bones are the same. You know, you can't make those any stronger. You can't make those bones any stronger. And I think we're at a certain point with the NFL. And let me tell you something, the PED use in the NFL has to be out of control and has to be unchecked for these guys to be the size that they are. The NFL still does not have HGH testing. Think about how ridiculous that is. You have the NFL, you have the biggest, strongest, fastest athletes in all of sports. On top of that, you have guys that need to recover from injury more quickly than any other sport, and we're not testing them for HGH. It's out of control. Joe in South Philly. Joe, one of the best callers I have in South Philly. You're on 94 WIP. What's going on, buddy? How are your Flyers doing?
I don't know. They're coming together. You know, it's Berube. He made a lot of good line changes. You know, they seem to be, you know, building chemistry. And, you know, finally, you know, they have wasted so many good efforts from Mason this year. You know, finally now they're coupling, you know, the good line play with, you know, with the goaltending. Now you're seeing the results. Now they're getting a little win streak going. They're playing good every night. They're no longer. Because, I mean, if you just watch any of the games from early in that season when they started 1-7, by the third period, they looked like they were just overwhelmed. They looked tired. They looked like they didn't want to be there. And you don't see that from them anymore. They look like they're ready to go in the third.
Yeah, you know, well, and they're not only the scoring goals. I feel like they're playing better defensively too. So that's a. You know, you hesitate to get too excited too quickly, but them stringing together wins is a positive. And I hate to tie it to that stupid fight against Washington, and I certainly won't give that any credit. But they've certainly been a better team since then. So on to the NFL. So what's your? Am I crazy on this? Am I right? Is the NFL worse than it was?
Well, in a way, yes. Yes and no. I mean, In the recent, you know, in the past couple seasons, the NFL has, I mean, and probably I guess it's just because, you know, they only play once a week. So every Sunday in the fall and winter is kind of like a mini holiday. So you focus on it even more so. The NFL is just overanalyzed, like like just like with the I there was a call a couple calls ago saying like they now they're like you put on you put on any channel during the day, they're analyzing every little thing and every little hit, and you know, like you were saying, you know, let's take two nights ago, the holding in the end zone, the Panthers and New England.
Yes.
Was it holding? And when is the moment he was contacted, when the ball crossed the goal line, and was it uncatchable? Like too much, like that's one of the things. Too much is left up to, now I feel like, the discretion of the referees who can't keep up with the players, because the players are so much bigger and faster. And, well, you know, I remember a time in the NFL where you didn't need that great of a quarterback. You could win if you had players around you. Now it's like the one of the things is the drop off from the starters to the backups is so far. Like look at the Packers. They lose Aaron Rodgers. Now look where they're at. They're like probably not even going to make the playoffs. The drop off, then the depth chart is bad. You know, the Thursday night games are just so god awful. And the way they have to play once every team now, they start from week two. Every team is playing on a Thursday night, and it's so bad.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the Eagles were lucky, I think, on some level to get rid of that Thursday night stuff early in the season and not have one of those clunkers now. You know, can you imagine getting on a roll and you win three in a row, then all of a sudden you have to play 2 days later somewhere else? You know, you get one day game planning in, and all of a sudden it's terrible. You know, thank you for the call, Joe. I appreciate it, man. You know, that call in the end zone, I saw so many – it creates an unfair expectation for the refs to be – you know, I saw a sports science – you know, freeze frame of what it would have looked like if Rob Gronkowski had not been held by Luke Kuechly, and if he could have gotten to that ball. As if, like, these poor refs standing on the field have the advantage of seeing that 3 days later. I think all the replays create a bit of an unfair expectation to what, you know, to what the game that these guys can actually call. Xfinity Voice Line is 888-729-9494, #9494, and your AT&T and Verizon cell. I know one man that cares far more about his fantasy football team than he does about the Eagles. Far more. He doesn't even care at all about the Eagles. Only about fantasy football. Is that the future? We'll talk to him next. And I promise we'll talk to Kitty about the Sixers as well. Randall, also a fantasy football point as well. Fantasy football taking over the world. You don't even need to play the real games. Just run them on a computer, right? I'm Spike Eskin. 94 WIP Sports Time is 11:17.
Monday mornings at 8, Angelo Cataldi, the Philadelphia sports team's front offices, Sports Radio 94, WIP.
Spike Eskin, until 2, very special guest in studio in moments, very special guest, special to some, less than special to others. 888-729-9494, #9494, your AT&T and Verizon cell. Now, this is one man that I know cares far more about his fantasy team than he does his own home team, which I think is a travesty. Nafis the Barber.
Hey, what's going on, Spike? How you doing?
You are you're an embarrassment to men everywhere, caring more about your fantasy teams than the Eagles.
Fantasy is where it's at, man.
Right? How many fantasy teams do you have?
I actually have three.
Three. That's a... And you consider yourself a bit of an expert, right?
Yes. Even though a couple of weeks ago I made a bad decision, but...
What was the bad decision?
Oh, man, you're going to have me say it. Okay, so yeah. I traded LeSean McCoy for CJ2K.
Oh, why'd you do that?
Well, I thought that Sadie was going to lose a stock, you know, and I thought CJ2K with Jake Locklear was going to, you know, with Jake Locklear and CJ2K play together, they play great. I didn't know he was going to get hurt.
You get bored. That's your problem. You get bored and you want to trade. So you were saying earlier that you thought the NFL football as good as it used to be or worse than it used to be?
Oh, it's terrible.
Terrible.
It's terrible. Yes.
And why do you think it's worse?
Because the defensive players don't have any freedom out there. I mean, everything is geared towards protecting the quarterback and protecting wide receivers. And that's not good for the sport of football.
Well, do you think that, let's say we're 5 years from now, and all of the players have been playing with these new rules for five more years, do you think it becomes better in 5 years than it is now?
No. I mean, because like Brian Dawkins said something earlier that I totally agree with. He said that the great legendary Brian Dawkins. He said that when a player is going to, when a defensive player is going to hit a wide, let's say a wide receiver, he's going to cringe up. And when you cringe up, the hit level shrinks. So now you're hitting the guy either in high on the chest or in a head. You know, and that's not in who's getting punished, the defensive players. That's not good.
I don't know, man. I wouldn't mind a 60-57 game. I kind of like points. Well, do you think it's going to make you? But see, you're a problem then, because if you think the game isn't good and you're in three fantasy football leagues, you're not helping anybody. You're not helping the game get better.
Listen. Hey.
Yeah.
And you said something that you said something earlier. Everybody has a bet on fantasy football.
They do.
No. Some leagues are free leagues. You're playing for ego and pride,
dude. Do you play in any free leagues?
Yes. I'm telling you, I play in one free league, and it's called Crackback. My brother, Phil Blackwell, and Aaron, and Fred, you know, we all playing it together, and it's all about ego and pride. We have a trophy that the winner gets at the end of the year. We have a chat line that we all are chatting on, talking trash all day, every day. So, you know, when we see each other, we can say, hey, you shut up because I beat you.
I don't believe you.
I'm telling you, it's not all about the money.
All right. Well, then I'm wrong. It's mostly about the money, though.
Some leagues. I mean, you have some big money. You got to get into it to understand it.
Then I want to be in your pride league then.
Next year. This is what I want to say to you.
What?
I think the NFL is hypocrites.
Why?
Whoever it was, because they said that by the book, Ahmad Brooks' hit was illegal. They had to throw a flag because it was illegal. He contacted him around the neck.
Drew Brees. They hit on Drew Brees.
Right. But when you have a penalty in the end zone, it was something. It might have been illegal contact. It might have been holding. But it was something that should have been called. So now, by the book, something should have been called, but nothing was called.
Well, but they said it was uncatchable. That's why they said it wasn't called.
Yeah, it was holding, illegal contact. Illegal contact happening even before Tom Brady threw the ball.
Did you have a bet on that game?
Yeah, I did.
All right, man. You can, at Nafis the Barber, right? Best barber in Philly.
No, yes, I'm one of the best. The best
barber in Philly. Thank you for calling, dude. I knew you had
any time, man.
I knew you had money on the game. Cuts Nerlens Noel's hair. You know that, Dad? Nafis cuts Nerlens Noel's hair. His flat top. He cuts it.
Well, I could cut it the way it looks.
No, I don't know.
Nobody would know the difference.
I don't know about that. Howard Eskin joins the show. We were just talking about A-Rod beforehand. And you hate A-Rod, right? You're anti-A-Rod?
I don't hate anybody, but I dislike A-Rod.
And why do you dislike? Don't you feel like he's been treated unfairly, though?
No.
Not at all.
Not at all.
So,
because he brings it upon himself, because he's such a, first of all, he's a bad guy, and talking to people that know who he is and what he is in the locker room.
Doesn't matter.
He's a bad guy.
Okay, but that doesn't matter.
It does matter.
Well, no. You don't get suspended from baseball for being a bad guy.
No, you get suspended for
breaking the rules.
But they know he's a liar, and the people at the Yankees know he's a liar.
Okay, but
he's a stone cold friggin' liar.
Let me ask you something. In your years of covering sports, how many liars have you run into that are athletes? Would you say
we're
good percentage
about
of them?
Another level here.
Right, but liar doesn't make you suspended. All right.
Let me ask you a question. Okay.
What is the penalty for your first PED suspension in baseball? What is the penalty that everyone has agreed to?
That's 50 games, right?
50 games, okay. So prior to this, how many suspensions has A-Rod had for PEDs?
Zero.
Okay.
How many times did he test positive before this?
While it was illegal? Zero. Zero times. Had one positive test, and that was before.
But he still tested positive.
But a lot of guys did that didn't get suspended for soft. That's the problem.
Well,
it's unfair.
How many times was Ryan Braun tested positive?
But zero.
Okay, but he got the suspension.
Well, but only 50 games. He got the one positive test that got nullified because of the FedEx guy.
Not by the test.
No, not by a test, but it's because he agreed to that suspension.
How come they all agreed?
Because the union has gotten soft in baseball and is no longer protecting the players.
Oh, okay,
that's what happened. You know what happened? Nobody wants to hear it, but because Latino players are have these, a lot of these PEDs, and the non-Latino players were fed up with it and decided they didn't want it anymore and decided they wanted their union to get tough on it. So you see all of these suspensions of these guys that do not have positive tests, they
Brian
get 50
Braun's
games.
Not Latino.
I know, but that's what, but what I'm saying is that the league over, that the union overall has been soft on this and has given in to the league. But that doesn't mean that when you have something that should be a 50-game suspension, there is no precedent to giving Alex Rodriguez a 211-game suspension.
Well, he should be suspended for a year. So it was from that point. Because we don't know what the evidence is.
Right. So
But I've been told the evidence is so overwhelming.
Okay.
That he took it. Whether he took a test or not, they're trying to clean up the game. This guy is the all-time cheater. This guy has records that shouldn't even be, because he's obviously cheated most of his career. So he may have been a really good player, but it's obvious that he cheated to get a lot of those numbers or most of those numbers. And they have such overwhelming evidence that he took the PEDs, whether he tested positive or not. It's about getting it. Isn't everything about getting it right?
It's not. This is personal. Okay. It's about revenge. Let me tell you, every baseball commissioner in the history of baseball has had vendettas against certain guys. And Bud Selig wants to make it his stamp on baseball that he cleaned up baseball. Well, I'm going to tell you something.
You're drinking A-Rod's Kool-Aid.
No, I'm going to tell you something. They have no chance of cleaning up baseball because every one of these suspensions that they have, they love into because Tony Bosch gave them all the information. So unless they decide that they're going to go to every distributor of PEDs and get them to play along with what they want, like Tony Bosch did, that they're not going to catch them.
So
and wait, let me finish. And Bud Selig wants it to be his, when they look back on Bud Selig, Bud Selig is the guy that cleaned up baseball. And he wants Alex Rodriguez to be his big trophy. So he took his personal feelings into it. He took a vendetta into it, and he's treating him unfairly. And if he had just given him 50 games or 100 games, then everything would have been fine. But instead, he went above and beyond. And they're not going to clean up baseball. They're not. They have no chance. HGH is only in your system for 2 days.
Okay, let me just start with this. A-Rod wouldn't have taken 50 games because, as he said tonight, it's history. It's my legacy. It's, you know what? You're more worried about yourself. That's what he is. He's a self-centered creep. He's a bleephole is what he is. That's what he is. And the reality is, the other guy, he's arguing that Tony Bosch, you know, these are liars and felons.
They are.
Okay, well, the reality is, the other guys accepted it because
they were pressured.
Pressured with what?
Their union pressured them to accept those penalties.
If this guy is a felon and a liar, what did the other guys accept it for? They could have fought
the
same thing.
Because they don't have $200 million. Antonio Bastardo doesn't have $200 million in the bank. He's got one shot to be in baseball. And he doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the lawyers. He doesn't have the clout in baseball to say, F you, I'm not taking this. And Alex Rodriguez does. Alex Rodriguez, it doesn't matter whether he comes back. He's got nothing to lose. But these other guys have everything to lose, so they shut up, they take their suspension, and they walk away.
Well, here's what he has. He's already lost it. So he's already lost because he looks like such a pathetic, pathetic, lying creep. That's what he is. He's
so Bud Selig looks good to you in this.
I'm not a Bud Selig fan, not by a little stretch, because he let Sosa and McGuire go on to save the game when they came back from a strike. I'm not a Bud Selig guy by any stretch, not even a little bit.
So why wouldn't you even consider that he is treating this situation unfairly?
Because it's not just him. It's all these people around him in baseball, which Alex Rodriguez, A-Rod, is telling people, oh, this guy didn't want it, and this guy didn't want it, and it's but that's a lie.
No, it's not.
Friggin'
no, it's
lie.
Not. No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
You're just making things up. But just because you say them doesn't make them fact.
It's not fact. I've talked to people in the Major League Baseball office.
Oh, here we go.
But
you're talking to one. Have you talked to any of A-Rod's people? Have you talked to any of Antonio? Have you talked to any of the people that were suspended this year based on the Biogenesis findings? Have you talked to any of their agents and asked how those people felt about their suspension?
No, because they're not going to talk about it.
Oh, so you have one side of the story, and because you have that one side of the story, you've determined
they
that
are
is
not. I'm going to tell you right now, baseball is not going to put themselves in a position to embarrass themselves.
They've already done it.
No,
they
A-Rod
already
has.
Look stupid.
You are clueless.
No, they don't. Yeah. I'm telling you that the tide is turning. People think the guy's being treated unfairly.
A-Rod. Yeah, people tell me they hate me, but they believe me. Oh, really? They hate you. Why do they believe you? He is a disgraceful, despicable human being who cheated the game.
Here we go. The sanctimony of the game.
No, I'm not sanctimony of the game. Hey, listen. When I grew up, and whether it was Mike Schmidt or whomever else hit 30-some home runs, now, you know, the bats have changed, the balls have changed, the parks have changed. I know those numbers are skewed. But when a guy like Sosa disgraced the game, and hit 60 home runs, what, 3 years in a row, and you hadn't done it for 40 years.
So all the guys on coke and greenies and steroids, the half of the 93 Phils were on steroids.
Yeah, but that doesn't help you hit it. That doesn't help you hit it further.
Oh, wait. So HGH helps you hit it further, but steroids don't?
No, steroids. I didn't say steroids. They didn't take steroids. They took greenies.
No, the 93 Phillies took steroids, unless they got...
Yeah, you know what? The 93 Phillies didn't break any records. They didn't... The best records in sports are baseball records.
You know...
Are baseball records.
Let me tell you
something. That's the history. All these other records, guys scored 30,000 points in basketball. Some guy has 90 points. It doesn't relate.
It is that sort of... You want to talk about relating? It is that sort of attitude why young people don't like baseball. Because they don't care about 100-year-old records. They don't care. It doesn't mean anything to them. And it's why they're losing... It's why they're losing the young part of the game. That exact thing, that the protection of the sanctimonious records that nobody cares about is turning people away.
Okay, the young people. Who are the all-time greatest players? You know, when they look at the history, and everybody loves the history. And I mean,
not everybody.
Well, a lot of people love the history.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth is a legendary guy.
Nobody cares.
Well,
nobody cares. No, they don't.
Yeah,
older people care. Younger people don't care.
Okay. Well, so
they never saw Babe Ruth play.
I didn't see Babe Ruth play.
Yeah. So, but they don't care.
I didn't see Ted Williams play.
They're 100 years away. So, what do you care? So they don't care.
But those are the standards that people should go for.
No, we should go by the standards of things from 60 years ago. So we should make sure that African Americans are treated unfairly and women are treated unfairly and gay people can't get married. And
way off track.
No, you're looking at
baseball is the game is all about numbers and it's all about historic numbers.
No,
when you walk in and you've been in the Hall of Fame.
Yes,
obviously. Okay. When you walk in there and you see those legendary players. And those, they hit baseballs with pogo sticks. I mean, with bats that you say, how do they hit the ball? It's like golfers back in the day hitting with clubs that weren't metal.
This is why young people don't care about baseball. It's why you're forcing people.
You know why they
don't
care about baseball?
Why?
Because the game takes too long. Because you sit there and you watch a guy twiddle with his jock strap and adjust his
how long does football
take? And pull his shirt out so he looks cool.
Football takes 3.5 hours a game.
And that's it.
Yeah, well, that's how long baseball takes.
But the point is, there's action throughout.
Really?
How much action is there?
There's 9 minutes of action in an NFL football game. 9 minutes.
Yeah, but everybody's at the line of scrimmage, and you're wondering, you're hoping. When a guy takes a pitch.
We got to take a break.
And the pitcher, you know, you're
just. We got to take a break. 888-729.
Baseball is not 94-94. I get it.
Pound 94-94 on your AT&T of Verizon.
But you hate football then, too.
That is Howard Eskin. I'm Spike Eskin, 94 WIP Sports. Time is 11:41. The mics are off. I'm Spike Eskin, Xfinity Voice Line, 888-729-9494, pound 9494, your AT&T and Verizon cell. I want to thank, of course, the big star for coming on my show. That is Nafis the Barber. Also, thanks to Howard Eskin for stopping by as well. Kitty in Clemson has been waiting. Is that Clemson, South Carolina?
Yes.
Wow, how about that? Wait, are you from?
Tigers.
Are you from here?
I'm from northern New Jersey, but I'm a loyal listener of Right to Ricky Sanchez.
Oh, really? But our Sixers podcast. Oh, well, thank you for listening. Really? You are?
Yeah, no, 100%. I listened to y'all today. I think y'all are so great and so funny.
Oh, well, thank you. How about that? That doesn't even seem real. Well, did you watch the game tonight?
No, unfortunately not. But I grew up a big Duke fan, and I just I love Elliot Williams. We only had him for a season.
Oh, but, yeah. Well, just to put it, just so in case people didn't know, let me just say real quick.
Okay.
The Sixers released Kwame Brown today, which is a very sad thing, and also released Darius Morris, and Elliot Williams was one of the guys that they picked up. Sort of, I didn't know anything of him. So he can play, you think?
Yeah, I mean, he won't have any cake incidents, but he definitely can play. We only had him for a season because he transferred to Memphis because he's from Memphis because his mom was having medical problems. But he's smart and he's very soft. And we didn't play him a lot. I hate that I'm saying we, but I grew up with it. But he didn't play a lot in the beginning of the season, but he started in a lot the last 11 of the 12 games. And the production of the team overall was great. He's great with off the ball. He has great movement and stuff. And not just that, but he also can play with the big white center, because I think that you can make parallels between Zubek and Hawes. when they're hot, and when they're cold, they're cold.
Yeah.
So, and I think it's actually funny because I looked up the plus minuses for the game, and he had the highest plus minus.
Yeah, he got in the wait. Didn't he get in the game? Well, no. I thought Brown had the highest plus minus.
No, he had 7. Brown had 5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so. I think the two guys the Sixers signed today were Lorenzo Brown and Elliot Williams. Lorenzo Brown, I heard, was wearing Darius Morris's jersey, but they signed they stitched Brown over the Morris. I don't know whose jersey Elliot Williams got. So there's Kitty's assessment of Elliot Williams. So you think he can play a little bit?
He definitely can play. He's just been getting hurt, and he was really good from the field, good from the line, good just percentage-wise with shooting and stuff, but it's his athleticism that's great. I mean, I know that he was just hurt with his, I think it was his Achilles or something like that he was out with, or his ACL maybe. I'm not sure. Yeah, Achilles he was out with, so I don't know how his speed is again, but he just, you can tell when he's on the court, you can feel his presence. He doesn't need to have the ball in his hands to make an impact on the court.
Well, Kitty, I got to take a break, and I appreciate you calling. Could you do me a favor for my producer, Adam, and for me? Could you just say y'all real quick?
Y'all.
Yes. There we go. We'll save that. All right. And thank you for listening to The Rights to Ricky Sanchez, our Sixers podcast. I appreciate it. Thank you, Kitty. Yeah, we do a Sixers podcast called The Rights to Ricky Sanchez, and every once in a while you find out somebody listens to it, and then you never imagine that one of those people is a girl. 888-729-9494 or #9494. Bob and Matt are next. I'm Spike Eskin, 94 WIP Sports Times, 1154.
At Euro Motor Cars Devon, we know that not everyone who drives...
We have found ourselves, we have wandered into a good season of Eagles football. Who'd have guessed? In this year of rebuilding, in this year of turning it around, of building a different culture, a winning football culture, they're actually winning. And the Eagles have become a good football team. Not a average football team that happens to win more than they lose, but a good football team, thanks to a... possibly a brilliant coach, but definitely a very, very good coach, an improving defense, and a defensive coordinator that we haven't given enough credit to until recently, a quarterback who has done everything in his power to try to prove doubters and haters such as myself wrong, has not thrown an interception, and they are a top three offense with one good wide receiver, really, a backup quarterback, you know, a tight end in Brent Celek, who may be toward the end of his career, and actually a legitimate defense. The Eagles are a good team. Did I say who I am? I'm Spike Eskin. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. In addition to talking about whether you think the NFL is as good as it once was, because I don't think it is. I compared it earlier to the .com bubble, that eventually, I know football is more popular than it's ever been. The NFL is more popular than it's ever been, but there's something about it that just doesn't feel as good to me, and I feel like at some point that could turn, that all of a sudden people might start to notice the games aren't as, think about primetime I think the quality of play is as good, you know. So I'm here to talk about the Eagles, about that topic, about whether you think the NFL is as good as it was. And as far as the Eagles go, you know, I decided that there are four levels of NFL football teams, elite, top level. So there's Denver, Seattle. I'm even thinking maybe Carolina's in there. Then there is good, that next level football team. New Orleans is in there. Detroit is in there. Then there's the middle, that middle section, Arizona and Oakland in the same group. They could be, anyone could beat anyone at any time. And then there are the really, really bad ones. To me, the Eagles have gone from level two, that middle section, to actually a good football team. Do you trust the Eagles? I do. I think the division is close to a lock. I think it's crazy, and I think they could win a playoff game. And I am not easily sold. I am not easily swayed, but I think they could be that team. Bob in Swedesboro, what did you want to say about NFL head injuries? You're on 94 WIP.
Thanks for taking my call. I know you're probably aware of the recent settlement between the NFL and the players group.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've done the math on the settlement. But it was not a lot of money for those players or those families making the claim. I was listening on the radio the other day to another station, to another announcer, who was interviewing a writer who posted a story on the Internet. They are now able to diagnose this CTE, this chronic traumatic encephalopathy, in people who are still alive. And the interview that they had was with Leonard Marshall, Joe DeLaMalier, and Tony Dorsett.
Yeah, you're talking about the name of the documentary is escaping me. But the documentary that was on PBS.
Right.
Right. League of Denial is what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I think you're going to see another very big swing and change in the game now, because they don't have to wait for a player to pass away before they can diagnose him. Somebody can be diagnosed in the middle of his career to see if he has the beginnings of this problem, and you can be diagnosing everybody who's retired and continued to, you know, to live a normal life or try to.
Well, how do you think that ends up affecting the game itself? Do you think that that is something that football can survive with adjustments, or do you think it just spells the end of football?
No, I think it can survive, and here's why. I did not play. But my father-in-law did. And when my father-in-law played, now that was in the 40s, Spike. But they never taught them to use the head as a weapon. And because the game has picked up so much speed, they have lightened or removed as much equipment as is humanly possible. When you used to look at offensive linemen, the shoulder pads were as high as the top of the helmet. Now, you know, they're almost linebacker size or wide receiver size. The wide receivers are wearing quarterback shoulder pads, and the quarterback's wearing damn near nothing. And there are no knee pads, no thigh pads, no rib pads, no hip pads, all in the name of gaining speed. The only thing they couldn't change or make any differences with was the helmet. So people coaching from Pop Warner on up to now, with some of these guys, have taught them to use the helmet as a weapon. And it may take 15 years, like it did Brozell, to bring parity, but you're going to have to take using the helmet as a weapon out of the game and teach people to put their face guard in the number of the opponent and wrap him up. How many guys do you see actually wrap their arms around somebody and tackle them with both arms?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that part of it is a process. I think the other part of it, in that the play is not as good, I think has to do with, you know, I think that the hard salary cap and the player movement has really changed football. It's by design. The leagues think parity is good, and I know people say they like parity, but I don't think parity in a sport, thank you for the call, Bob. I don't think parity in a sport is a long lasting scenario. I don't think people want to tune in for the lottery. You know, I think the NCAA tournament, it works on some level. But I think is a cultural phenomenon. I don't think the NFL needs parity. I don't think that makes, I don't think it makes the league better. Gus in Allentown, you're on 94 WIP. And as usual, I'm not, let me finish. As usual, Gus wants to get rid of J-Roll.
No, I don't think, I want to bring that conversation up. But, you know, your father has to learn something, which is in this country, it's not just the good people that deserve a fair hearing. The ones that he deigns are good people. It's everybody. Everybody deserves a fair hearing.
I agree with
Otherwise, you have anarchy, which is what your father is a big exponent of. But anyway,
well, just to point out, in case people weren't listening, Gus is talking about, I had a discussion with my father about A-Rod, and my father kept saying that how bad a guy that A-Rod was, and I agree with Gus in that it doesn't matter how bad a guy A-Rod is, he still doesn't deserve to get 200 games if everybody else is getting 50.
And when a powerful organization, so much more powerful than the individual, overreaches, you're right, the tide will turn.
How bad
that guy is.
And I think obviously what A-Rod did today was very calculated, but I think it was smart. And I think, right. I believe that the tide has not turned in that most people support him, but I think far more people support him now than did a year ago.
Balance.
Yeah, I think so.
They're thinking about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They weren't thinking about it before. Okay, now the Jimmy Rollins thing is very interesting. Most of the time on this radio station, the host will say something, or the caller will propose something, and the host will shoot it down. That's generally the way it works, you know. But last night was an interesting twist. Jody proposed something, and I shot it down. And the proposal was, he thought that there, because the Phillies have wasted all this money on Hammond Eggers like Bird and Ruiz, that they have no money to operate. So they might trade Jimmy Rollins, let's say, to the Cardinals. Now, you know, I'd love to get rid of Jimmy Rollins, but the fact of the matter is, the Cardinals have no interest in Jimmy Rollins. And I think it's going to be very, very hard for the Phillies to do what Jody's suggesting. I wish that, what are you saying, there was a possibility. I don't think there is, except maybe, just maybe, I don't think the Phillies have the nerve to do this, is threaten Rollins. Bring him into the office and say, look, you are not getting your 400 bats next year, pal. You're not getting them.
So you won't vest. You won't get your
right,
next. Right.
Right. It's the only way that, because otherwise, not only are there very few teams that want him, but he wants to pile up all these idiotic, you know, meaningless numbers as a Phillies, whatever, leadoff batter, whatever. I mean, that's all he lives for, are these personal records. And he doesn't want to leave Philly because then the personal records in Philadelphia would no longer exist, obviously. Anything he did somewhere else wouldn't count for here. But maybe you could threaten him into saying, look, life's not going to be a ball of cherries for you here next year. So maybe, but even that probably won't work. What do you think?
Threatening him into trading him?
At least threatening him into saying, look, you're not getting your 400 at bat.
Yeah.
Galvis is going to play half the games this year.
I think a lot of times when guys have no trade clauses that they supposedly won't give up, that it always comes down to money. Everything always comes down to money. That's what it comes down to. They want money. And they don't get these no trade clauses because, look, Michael Young wanted to stay in Texas more than anybody wanted to stay in Texas, right? But when it came down to it, when they said, look, we're not going to play you here, we want to move you to Philly, he went to Philly, right? He just wanted to make sure that
that Rollins might go for it.
Yes.
They told him, all right, well, then maybe there is a slight chance. You still have to find a buyer. Certainly the Cardinals are way too smart an organization to fall for Jimmy Rollins, but we'll see. I hope Jody's right. I just think that it's not going to be easy. I don't think the Phillies have the nerve to threaten him because he's had his way with the organization for so many years.
Well, everyone does. You know, it's the truth. I mean,
he really walked all over Manuel. He was really pathetic.
Here's the sad thing about the Phillies. Because every move they make, everyone in a vacuum, if it was a move unto itself, would not be the worst move in the world. Like, let's look at the Marlon Byrd deal. Okay, Marlon Byrd, you're taking a chance that he's going to be as productive as he was last year for at least one of these next 2 years. $8 million a year is really not that much for a major league player at one point. Sure, in a vacuum, it's fine. Carlos Ruiz, there's no catchers on the market. You need a catcher. You need a right-handed hitter. He's going to be 35, coming
he's
off a PED suspension. I agree with you.
He's cool. That was a terrible. That was the straw that broke the camel's back.
I agree with you. But what I'm going to tell you is that those things are not in a vacuum. They're adding those two players, and you're adding Ruiz. You're not just keeping him. You're adding him to a team that has another third. So you add Marlon Byrd, 36 years old, off a PED suspension for 2 years. You add Carlos Ruiz. Let me finish. You add Carlos Ruiz for 3 years at 35 years old, off a PED suspension. And all you're hoping is that these two 35 and 36-year-old guys, combined with your other 35 and 6-year-old guys, somehow have a revival all at the same time and do something that players don't do. It's embarrassing.
It prevents them from actually improving at any other position because now they're tied up with all that money in those years with him. It's a disaster. One last point I want to make about football.
Yes, sir.
And Big Daddy thinks it actually helps football in terms of its, you know, popularity or its publicity. Every game now is now about an official call. It's ridiculous. It's the worst one over the weekend, I don't think, was the Carolina game. And you can make a case for that one. But the one that was a killer was that 49ers.
The Niners one, yeah.
That was a killer because you're penalizing good defensive play. I say if it's not flagrant, okay, and you want to assess the penalty, assess it after the play. In other words, the ball goes to the 49ers, then penalize them the 15 yards for the penalty. But don't change the game because on a play that was a good play by the team that made it. That is demoralizing.
I agree with you, Gus. Thank you for the call, man. Yeah. Well, you're also penalizing the guy for being taller than Drew Brees. I mean, that was essential. I don't know what you can do. I don't know if you've... Drew Brees is like 5'10". You know, if you're a normal defensive lineman in the NFL and you're going to sack Drew Brees, I don't know how you're doing it. I don't know how you're bringing him to the ground and not touching his head or neck. You know, the guys are too big and he's too small. I agree with that. And the thing with everything coming down to a call, and I think that's on us as much as it's on them. You know, you could dissect every, again, we are looking at 20 at any time in the NFL, even with two bad teams, we are looking at 22 of the biggest, strongest, fastest, most talented athletes in the entire world. And you got five old guys out there chasing them around, trying to figure out what's going on. We look at every play and dissect it like that. And here's the truth is that there are calls in the middle of the game that we don't dissect the rest of the week that are as that have the same amount, the same effect that an end of the game call has. You know, we pick and choose these plays and we talk about them for five, and it becomes more important than the actual game is. I think that's less about the refs and less about the players and more about us. We got to stop talking about the ref calls. We got to stop showing freeze frames of Rob Gronkowski. It's not about football. What are we even talking about? You know, what are we even, we're guessing whether Rob Gronkowski could have gotten to that ball or not. Just like they were. But for 4 days, 5 days, looking at pictures. I don't want to do that anymore. I mean, it cheapens everything. 888-729-9494 is the Xfinity voice line. Lamont does not want us to trade Evan Turner. And Jay wants to explain exactly what ended dynasties in the NFL. Matt and Matt on the way as well. And I have a pair of Temple versus UConn football tickets to give away. Primetime Showdown, Temple and UConn, Friday, November 23rd. That is this Friday, 7 p.m. at Lincoln Financial Field. Bring a canned food item to the box office on game day. Save money on tickets. Plus, kids get to score a touchdown on the field after the game. Visit alstix.com. I'll give those away to an exceptional caller. An exceptional caller. I'm Spike Eskin, 94 WIP Sports. Time is 12:15.
WIP.
My name is Spike Eskin. I am on Team A-Rod. I do believe Alex Rodriguez has been treated unfairly. I don't think, and I don't want him to be my friend. I don't think A-Rod's a good guy. I imagine that he probably did do PEDs. I have no doubt that he did PEDs, but you can't say that the penalty for PEDs is 50 games and then to give the guy 211 games and not explain to everybody why. You know, if you're Bud Selig, you can't not show up at the arbitration hearing and then they say he doesn't have to speak. You know, if you're Alex Rodriguez, here is the most dangerous thing for baseball from Alex Rodriguez. A-Rod has nothing to lose. He had nothing to lose. Think about A-Rod a year ago. Everybody hated him. Declining skills. You know, PED suspensions on the horizon. At this point, the worst that he can get is more than a season, right? excuse me, the worst he can get is 211 games. A-Rod's got nothing to lose. So A-Rod is going all out to show that baseball is not just treating him unfairly, but doesn't really have the evidence to suspend the players that they've suspended so far. You know, these guys that got suspended last year, Antonio Bastardo did not have a positive test. He didn't. You know, you threaten guys with less money and less clout than Rodriguez has, and they just take it. You know, Antonio Bastardo needs to take his 50-game suspension and just move on and try to get back into the league. A-Rod doesn't care. A-Rod's got nothing to lose. And I think for baseball and for Bud Selig wants it to be his landmark moment that he got rid of PEDs. He ain't getting rid of PEDs unless Tony Bosch has a note on everybody in baseball that's taken them. You know, I think Bud Selig could end, his legacy could end up being screwing up this A-Rod thing, is what I think it could be. 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Lamont thinks that there is no way we should trade Evan Turner, and I have to hear this. Why is that, Lamont?
I just want to get your take on with these supposed experts. I just got done arguing with some of my friends over it. My whole thing is everybody's talking about tank and trade him, Spencer Hawes, Thaddeus Young. My whole thing is why would you want to trade the guy now for what the experts are saying is a lower first-round draft pick when, as the number two overall pick, he's finally giving you what it was he was drafted for. He's averaging 20-plus, close to 7 boards, almost 4 or 5 assists a game. He finally gets it and whatnot. Maybe it's because of the system or the coach, or maybe it's the fact that he's finally playing with a real point guard. I don't know, but the guy finally gets it. Why would you want to trade him and whatnot for a lower first-round draft pick if that's what you want to get for him? You don't even know what that guy's going to bring in here. He might not even be able to give you half of what Evan is giving you right now.
Well,
considering most of these guys, they don't even spend, what, more than a year in college?
Okay, so let me explain. Here's why I would do it. So first of all, Evan Turner is a free agent after this year. And if Evan Turner keeps up these numbers, Evan Turner is probably going to get somewhere between $11 and $13 million a year. The problem with paying Evan Turner $11 to $13 million a year is that if you were one Evan Turner away, if you were a third guard away and you had that much cap space and you already had your superstars in place and it worked, then that's one thing. But you don't have any of that in place. And here's what I tell you about the numbers Evan Turner's putting up. And he hasn't had a good 4 or 5 games. He played well against Dallas, but overall he hasn't been great lately. Is that these numbers, first of all, especially his shooting percentage, will start to even out. But he is scoring. I've always maintained that Evan Turner would be a really good third or fourth best player. But if he's your best player, then you're not very good. And the problem is that right now you have a 20-point scorer on a bad team. And what you have to ask yourself is, what is Evan Turner's role on a good team? And if on a good team it's 22 minutes a game and a guard off the bench, well, then you can't be paying him $11 to $13 million. So it's less about what you get for him. It's more about that if this year ends, you're not getting anything for him. Yeah, he's just going to leave.
Now my thing with that is, okay, granted, I'm not expecting Evan Turner to be the superstar on this team. What I'm saying is we have 2 first-round draft picks coming in the upcoming draft, right? Okay, let's say you move a Thad Young. Now, him, I can understand you trying to get a lower first-round draft pick for, because that's right around where he was drafted to begin with, right? On top of that, you got Nerlens coming back along with Arnett Moultrie.
I got to tell you, Lamont, Thad Young's a better basketball player than Evan Turner is.
Who is?
Thad Young's a better player than Evan Turner. I don't care where they're picked in the draft. It doesn't matter to me where they're picked in the draft. I mean, that's insignificant to me.
Yeah, okay.
You know, Kwame Brown was the first pick in the draft. You know, I don't care where they're picked. That is insignificant. What's significant is Thad Young's on a $9 million. Look, they could trade Thad. I'm fine with them. I'm fine with them trading Thad if they trade Thad. But
how old is Thad anyway?
25. He's 25.
Oh, he's only about 25? Okay.
Yeah,
all
he's
right,
been in the league 7 years, but he's only 25. So
okay.
Here's the deal. Thank you for the call, Lamont. I don't know what they're going to do. There's no way. I think it's very unlikely Spencer Hawes, Evan Turner are on the team after this year. Thaddeus Young could be, and he hasn't actually really played all that well this year, and I think that makes it harder to trade him. So I don't know, but I think it's unlikely. You just can't pay Evan Turner that much money, and I think the problem with Evan Turner is in his head. Evan Turner thinks he should be the best player on the team, and as long as he thinks that, he's going to mope when he's not the best player on his team. And I think you've seen that the last 4 or 5 games, and things aren't going so well. Evan Turner is not quite as good as he was. Jay has the explanation as to why dynasties have ended in the NFL. Why is that, Jay?
Yo, Skip, what's happening, my man?
Hey, Jim.
Hey, last time I talked to you, the Sixers had just beat the Heat, so it looks like the Sixers are getting back to normal.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody was worried they were going to win too many games. They're not so worried anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, real quick, before I go to the NFL state, I just want to say that I think Billy Davis might be the unsung hero here.
I'll tell you, man, we were ready to run Billy Davis out of town, and we were ready to run ship out of town for hiring Billy Davis, and now all of a sudden, both those guys look pretty good at this point, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, they're all in a transition here from this 4-3 to 3-4. And even the games that we're not scoring, they're keeping us in the game, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you, man. And here's the other thing, is that their secondary is... I'm really impressed at what the front seven has done. Really, really impressed. Impressed that they've been able to fit Fletcher Cox in there. Benny Logan's looked like a player. Obviously, the vet guys, Barwin and Ryan's have been good. But that secondary, there's no players in that secondary, man. Kerry Williams stinks. Patrick Chung stinks. Nate out. I mean, he has somehow, this defense has somehow been able to pull it together with a secondary that I don't think is very talented at all, at all. So, again, they've played a lot of bad offenses over this streak that they've played well. But I'll tell you, man, it's hard not to be impressed with the job that he's done.
Yeah, absolutely. Even the Dallas game, they held Romo to only 17 points, and he was putting up 500 yards a game.
Yeah, that. Yeah, absolutely.
So on the NFL, I think expansion is one of the reasons that we don't see these great teams anymore.
Because it's thinned out the talent pool.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look the last few real dynasty. I mean, I know the Patriots have won a few times over the last decade, but yeah, Dallas,
San Francisco, I think, were
and Denver, I guess, with LA.
Right.
They picked up a few, but that was around the mid 90s. And then once you bring in Carolina, Jacksonville, you're talking 106 extra players in the league. And now you look, almost every team in the league doesn't even have number one quarterback. You're expecting them to have two quarterbacks, and then that trickles down to every other position.
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't brought up, I did bring up free agency, and I think free agency and the inability, the difficulty of teams keeping their players, paying is realizing that a franchise quarterback is so important, but paying non-franchise quarterbacks like their franchise quarterbacks is a huge problem. That the Ravens are in trouble because of all the money they gave Joe Flacco. They're in trouble. And that guy is not, when I talk franchise quarterbacks, man, it's like Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Drew Brees. I don't even know if there's another one in the league at this point. You know, maybe there might be a couple in a few years, but right now it's those three guys. I'm okay with paying those three guys $20 million a year because they're so important. But when you're paying guys like Eli Manning or Joe Flacco or just as a reward for winning the Super Bowl, that's hard for teams, especially when talent is thin in the first place. And then you can't pay for it because you're paying a guy more than he's worth. So
I agree. Yeah. How about Matt Flynn getting that big deal, or even Sam Bradford, who's the number one pick in the draft?
Yeah,
like $50 million.
Matt Flynn got it after one good game. He had
one good game late in the season. I don't even think the Patriots are playing their starters in that game.
No, yeah, it was six touchdowns, right? Threw six touchdowns in that game, and then he's still getting paid. And here's the best part about Matt Flynn. He's still getting paid on that deal, and then from three other teams this year have decided to pay him at least for 1 week. The Raiders were paying him. The Bills were paying him. It's unbelievable, Matt Flynn. But, yeah, I agree with you.
It's ridiculous.
So do you enjoy watching the NFL as much now as you did 10 years ago?
Well, I definitely still enjoy the NFL. I mean, right. I love football. I guess maybe it's kind of like that thing, and they say the good old days. Like, when you're a kid, you see Elway and Randall and Troy Aikman and all these guys, and it's so great. So maybe it's just, you know, like when your dad tells you that Football was better when he was younger.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the same thing. I mean, but I still love the game.
Absolutely.
Maybe it's just because it's football, so you're always going to love it. But,
yeah.
I mean, you always think things were better when you were younger, I guess.
Absolutely. Thank you for the call, Jay. I appreciate it. Yeah, totally. The good old days. Hey, I've been waiting for somebody to accuse me of that all night. I've been talking about how football hasn't been as good. And I don't think the product is as good. I don't think it's very good right now. But I've been waiting for somebody to call me old guy all night. And it was a great point he just made, that everything was better when you were younger. I swear when I pick up, you know, a bag of chips and I'm like, man, weren't there more chips in the bag when I was younger? Or I was holding crimpets the other, Tasty Cake crimpets. I'm sure they're the same size. But I'm looking at it, go, man, I think a butterscotch crimpet was bigger when I was younger. And music. I mean, when I worked at I worked at WISP for a very long time. And, you know, we played the hell out of AC/DC and Ozzy, and everybody would say, man, rock was just better in the 80s. And there was a part of that that makes you feel like you're your parents when they were telling you that music was better when they were your age. So maybe football was not better. But I think the better teams were better. I think the top teams were better at that point. Xfinity voice lines 888-729-9494. Mike in Glenside also thinks the Eagles have a chance at winning a playoff game. I have a bunch of people telling me that want to tell me that the Sixers should not trade Evan Turner. I knew this was going to happen. Did you see the game tonight? He got six shots blocked tonight. Matt wants to tell me that Sean Couturier is going to make a comeback. And, oh, my God, all the Sixer stuff. How about that? Xfinity voice line, 888-729-9494, pound 9494 in your AT&T and Verizon cell. My name is Spike Essie. I'm going to be here with you until 2. 94 WIP Sports Time is 1236.
It's the bye week.
Waiting for when the words start so I can sing along. They don't? Oh, I'm Spike Eskin. I'm just kidding, Dave. I know the words don't start. I'm Spike Eskin. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494. If you ever listen to my program, the Midnight to 2 segment is always a little more strange than the 10 to Midnight segment because I'm always a little more tired. It always gets a little stranger. Pound 9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Mike in Glenside. Mike, I believe that Mike is going to tell me that the Eagles are for sure going to win the division. Is that the case? I'm going to put Mike on hold. Can you check? It sounded like his phone was a little iffy. So why don't we go to Renard? Renard, you're on 94 WIP. Oh, you're going to be one of those guys that insists that we keep Evan Turner.
Well, listen, at some particular point, you're going to have to pay at least three high-priced players. Every time I turn around, the Sixers are getting rid of their best player, whoever's playing the best. They got rid of Iguodala. Look at what he's doing. They got rid of Jrue Holiday. At some particular point, listen, why is it that Miami can afford LeBron, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, but we can't afford Evan Turner?
Well, no, but that's not the point. The point is, think about it this way.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, sure, for sure.
He's saying that he's scoring 20 points on a bad team. If I have to stop Evan Turner, each team tried to take away their best player. So you mean to tell me that if just because they're a bad team, if there's a bad team, then it's easier to stop the best player on a bad team?
No, because it's just, here's the thing, man. It's just Matt. I'm not saying that Evan Turner is not a talented basketball player. I think he's talented. But wait, let me say. So here's the thing, is that Ricky Davis. What do you think of Ricky Davis as an NBA player? Ricky Davis played for the Cavs for a while, was the 21st overall pick, was on the Hornets. Ricky Davis was not a very good basketball player, but Ricky Davis was on some bad teams. Now, here are the points scored by Ricky Davis from 01 to, let's say, 07. 17.7 a game, 18.7, 17.5, 16.4. He was the leading scorer on a bunch of those teams, but he wasn't that good. What happens is, when you get 100 possessions a game, somebody's got to score points.
Right, but that means he's capable.
No, I mean, but it means that somebody's capable. They're all capable. They're NBA. Charles Barkley once said, any knucklehead can score. Right. That's what...
Before you let me go, let me make one point about this tanking thing.
Yes.
Now, when was the last time that the number one pick won the championship for the team that he was picked by?
Well, that's not really the point, I don't think.
Well, if you get LeBron James, you know what LeBron James had to do in order to win the championship? He had to leave Cleveland.
Well, because nobody wanted to play in Cleveland. Well, that was the problem.
Who wanted to play in Philly?
I think you'll be fine here. I really do. They're building. I'll address all these. Thank you for the call, Renard. Here's why I think you'll be fine. First of all, I think the ownership is a good ownership that's going to make players want to be here. They're building a new practice facility. Look, a practice facility matters to these guys, especially when the money's the same everywhere. The money's the same everywhere. Right now they're practicing at PCOM. Think about that. There's a professional basketball team practicing at the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine. They don't even have their own practice facility. It's insane. You know, you look at the clubhouse for the Dallas Mavericks and then you realize the Sixers are practicing at PCOM. The reason that the Miami Heat can pay Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh that much money is because two of the guys are Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. The problem isn't when you're paying Dwayne Wade and LeBron James $18 million a year. The problem is when you're paying Elton Brand $18 million a year or Evan Turner $13 million a year. It just doesn't work. It doesn't work. I think Evan Turner at his best is like a 11-point-a-game score on a really good team and maybe a third or a fourth option. So let's try Mike again. Mike in Glenside, you're on 94 WIP.
Wow, about Evan Turner. I think they got to keep him. But I'm going to talk about the Eagles.
Yes.
You got to keep Evan Turner because you got to keep him until you get someone better. I mean, that's simple. You can't get rid of people. Just, you know what I mean? But that's why I feel about Evan Turner. You're not a bad talent. But about the Eagles, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Here's how I think about the Eagles. Just listen to me for a second, all right? You know, first of all, it's the first year. You know, people are going to realize the first year. And even when I saw the defense going on the field in the beginning, it was like, yeah, they were terrible. But even common sense says, listen, it's new. It's going to get better. How much better, we don't know. But the defense is going to get better, okay? So thank God they're playing a little better. And I think they're playing a little bit better because they're getting a lot more push up front. The defensive backs here, I can see where they're not the greatest. But, you know, that Carmichael guy and those other guys been filling in, they're not as good. I mean, the starters they have were a little bit better. So I think they stopped the bleeding a little bit on defense, and it's only going to get better. On the offensive side of the ball, we didn't know what we had. I was really befuddled a little bit about when Nick Foles had that little hiccup against Dallas. And I still think he was hurt because the guy comes out, doesn't show any indication like that, and now he's playing pretty decent. So I think what we have to do in Philadelphia here is be satisfied. They're back in the playoff hunt. They're looking pretty good. They got good material on offense. Nick Foles has good material on offense. You don't have to stand out. You don't have to be a 4-6 sprinter to play quarterback. You know, you can't have everything. I'd rather a guy could throw the ball than can run the ball and not throw the ball.
Yeah, but he can't even throw. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do the Nick Foles thing all night. And I agree with you. He's played well. Hold on. He's played well.
Right.
Here's the thing with him running the ball. Everybody's so excited that he ran for 10 yards and blah, blah, blah. But here's the problem is that there are designed runs in this offense. And if you're going to be as slow as he is, that he's going to get crushed. There were a couple of times where he took licks in the middle of that field. And part of being fast enough is being able to get out of the way and be able to get out of bounds. And I know we're all so happy that Nick's a big kid and can take a hit. But one of these times when he's running in the middle of the field, like his feet are in cement, he's going to get clocked and that's going to be it. So Chip Kelly has been very clear that he is not changing. It is the same offense, that there are read option plays, that you're going to run all this. Nick Foles has done a wonderful job. But I refuse to believe that the ability to be more mobile than he is and the ability to have a stronger arm than he does is not something that Chip Kelly wants. And we won't know this until draft day in May, but I am convinced on draft day in May, on draft day one or draft day two, Chip Kelly's taking a quarterback. I don't have any doubt in my mind. Okay. But that said, but let's just, you know, so whatever.
Okay, but you're saying you do want a quarterback who's faster with a better arm. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes.
Okay, now what I'm saying is you got to deal with what you got to deal with right
yes,
now.
Yes, okay? Absolutely,
you know,
100%.
And I think, listen, am I following Nick Foles? No, because of the Dallas game. But, you know, you can't, I mean, listen, I'm realistic, you can't, I don't have anything really to knock the guy on yet. The main thing that he had to do, listen, the most important thing in this offense that he's done is, did you see where LeSean Joy was getting jumped because everybody was keen on? Because they didn't respect the run. At least he can now make them play a little bit of a run. Can he do the 20-yard sprint downfield? We all know he can't. But right now, you got to get what you take. I'd rather take a better passer than a better runner. You know, and see what happens.
But I want both. I see Cam Newton, and I want both. I want a guy Mike, thank you for the call. I agree. What we have now is the fact that they are doing this in the situation. You know, let's talk about yards per game. Here's the top five: Broncos, Saints, Packers, Lions, Eagles. Peyton Manning, Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Stafford, and we have a combination of Michael Vick and Nick Foles. That's the job that Chip Kelly has done here is unbelievable. And look at the receiving corps on this other team. Like on the Saints, Jimmy Graham and Megatron and Jordy Nelson. This is unbelievable what the Eagles are doing with the limited amount of talent they have. It's unbelievable. It's unheard of. What Chip Kelly is doing is unheard of with the talent. Think about every other team in the NFL who has had to rely on backup quarterbacks, none of them have been as successful offensively as the Philadelphia Eagles have been. None of them. This has been unbelievable. So that's why I'm so positive for the future. And I don't want to dwell on, look, when I'm watching the games, I can think about every position and think about if I'd want somebody better or not. It doesn't mean that I'm not enjoying this now. I'm impressed with the job that Nate Allen's done the last five games. I am. I'm impressed because I don't hear his name. I don't see him getting toasted or trucked or anything like that. You know, but it doesn't mean that I don't want somebody better than Nate Allen in the future. We'll address the draft when we address it. But I don't think that I need five more games of watching Nick Foles for me to understand what Nick Foles is. And I don't think that Chip Kelly needs five more games. I think Chip Kelly, you look at every quarterback Chip Kelly has had while he's been a head coach. Every quarterback has succeeded. Every quarterback has had an unreal touchdown to interception ratio. That means one of two things. It means either Chip Kelly has been able to scout unbelievable quarterbacks, or Chip Kelly has been able to coach those guys up to be successful. It's whichever you believe to be, maybe a combination of both. So Aaron doesn't think a potential superstar for the Sixers is the answer. And AJ has the explanation. So does Paul about why the NFL are not what they used to be. I don't think it's what it used to be either. And Matt has a completely ridiculous notion about the Sixers. You can get on board, too. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, #9494 under AT&T and Verizon Cell. I'm Spike Eskin, 94 WIP. Sports time is 1255.
Hi, Michael Barkan here. Holiday season upon us. Thinking about popping the question to you.
WIP.
Two words. Pecan pie.
You read my mind, Dave Urem. 1 hour left in the Spike Eskin program. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, #9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Of course, Angelo will deliver the pecan pie before the Arizona game. He hasn't promised to yet, and he's protesting, but he will deliver the pecan pie. It got me thinking, as I was thinking about that, what is the best kind of pie? And pecan pie is right there close to the top. The problem is that pecan pie is almost like cheating. I always felt that way when I think about tasty cake pies. Like the Tasty Clair is a great pie. It's almost like cheating, man. I mean, it's cream and chocolate. How can you compare the Tasty Clair to an apple? Or I believe the best fruit pie that Tasty Cake has is peach. But it's almost like not even, it's not a fair comparison. I don't believe it's a fair comparison. So though pecan pie is wonderful, is a wonderful pie. It's like a pie that's essentially all icing. You know, you get the pecan glaze thing on the top, and then all the filling is, I don't even know how that filling has anything to do with pecans. I don't know if it's made out of pecans, but it's like a sweet icing jelly stuff. So I think pecan pie is a wonderful pie. I think it might be the best tasting pie, but I don't know that you can compare it to fruit pies. That's my bit on pies. Aaron doesn't think that grabbing a potential superstar is the answer for the Sixers. Aaron, that sounds like crazy talk to me. Sell me on your idea here.
Well, listen, Spike. Like I listen to you whenever you're on the radio, but I never get a chance to call in because when I'm on the way home, when I get into the house, I can't talk. People are asleep, all that good stuff.
I got you. Well, but I appreciate you checking in, and thank you for listening.
But this is what I look at. Since the ping pong balls were introduced in 1985, it's only been, I can't, off the top of my head, probably 6, 7, 8 franchises that actually won a championship. Only 6, 7, or 8 franchises won a championship. And to go back to your point when you talk about with the other caller about expansion. Expansion spreads talent across the league, but it's only a certain limited few who have great talent. So, yeah, you can have a superstar that put people in the seats, but the likelihood of that player winning a championship is almost zero to none. How many great players played against Magic, Michael, Bird, Kobe, and LeBron?
So I will agree with your scenario. So if I agree with your scenario that it's not a guarantee because nothing's a guarantee, then tell me what a better plan is.
Oh, no, I'm not saying not having superstar is a better plan. I'm just saying everyone who thinks that, oh, if we grab one of these top, well, I will only say it's only two potential great players out of them three that everyone's talking about, and I think it's only Julius Randle and Jabari Parker. I personally don't see it in Andrew Wiggins. That's just me personally.
Yeah, and it hasn't been that much time either. So
The likelihood of them, either of them, one of them bringing the championship to a team that they're with is unlikely just based on the history of the NBA. I'm just going off the history of the NBA.
And even let's think about this, Aaron. Forget about Kevin Durant for a second. Not only did they get Kevin Durant, but they drafted Russell Westbrook and they drafted James Harden. All three of them were superstars, and they didn't win a championship.
They didn't win a championship. So it's about having the best player in the NBA on your team. Right. Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Shaq. Well, the best players in their era.
Yeah, but it's also this is the way I think about it, Aaron, is that you have to give yourself the best chance of doing that. None of it's a good chance, right? All of it is still a bad chance, but you have to give yourself the best chance. And I agree with you. Even if they get the first pick in the draft, I mean, Kwame Brown was the first pick in the draft. You know, Hasheem Thabeet was the second pick in the draft. Evan Turner was the second. There have been a ton of top three. John Wall, I don't know if he'll ever win a championship, you know? There are a bunch of those guys. But I think that the idea is to get as many young guys with potential and figure out which ones have the best chance of contributing. And then if you get that first one, love what Houston did, man. They found a way to get enough young assets to get James Harden. And once they got, they might not win a championship, but once they get James Harden, then they convince Dwight Howard to go. They had some really smart drafts. I mean, look at Chandler Parsons. They got Chandler Parsons in the second round. It's unbelievable, you know? And everybody was making fun of that Jeremy Lin signing. All of a sudden, the guy is on fire again. So I agree with you. Thank you for the call, Aaron. I agree with you that but there's no locks. There's no locks in any sport. You know, you could have think about Dan Marino. I mean, the Miami Dolphins had the best quarterback in football, arguably the best quarterback in football for his entire career. Never won a Super Bowl. Never. You know, and even in the NFL, you can have a Peyton Manning's only won one. There's no guarantee in any sport. There's no lock. You just have to give yourself, Sam Hinkie said to us one morning, you have to identify what the process is to build a winner. You have to be committed to that process, and you have to be unwavering in your commitment to that process. You can't let the results get in the way of what your process is. And sometimes, you know, people can get swayed by, they say, this is the best way to build a winner. And they get frustrated because it doesn't happen right away. And then they stray from what that belief is. You have to believe in, whether it's the Eagles and Howie Roseman and Chip Kelly, you know, know, think about Chip Kelly. Think about it in, I know I'm asking for it here, but think about it in terms of the quarterback. Let's say you're Chip Kelly and you have your belief in the offense, and you believe that the height of it is by a quarterback. Let's just say, for example, a quarterback that can run. Now, they have success this year, right? And but Chip Kelly has built this process and this belief over time. They have success this year. Let's say they win 10 games, win the division, win a playoff game. The wrong thing for Chip Kelly to do would be to abandon his belief that has made him successful to do something different just because of an anomaly. You know, you have to have belief in the process. And the process that the Sixers are doing is, I believe, the right one. And I believe the guy that believes in it believes it's the right one. And I also believe, you know, the jury is out on all these guys. But I think it's amazing the people running the Eagles and the Sixers compared to the people running the Phillies and the Flyers. It's like night and day. It's like two organizations have smart people and two organizations have I don't want to say they're not smart people, but two organizations know what they're doing. Two organizations do not know what they're doing. The disparity has never been bigger. AJ, West Oak Lane, you're on 94 WIP. AJ, tell me.
No. What's up, Spike? I had to say what's up to you because I'm just sitting here shaking my head, agreeing with you so much, man. How old are you, man?
I am 37. You're young.
I'm 30. See, I'm 33.
Oh, okay.
It's saying like we're from the same. You know, thing. Talk to you guys because this is my first time really listening to you, but I had to call in. Yeah, I mean, when you was talking about the NFL and why it's so different from back in the day,
it is.
I remember watching a San Francisco 49ers game. The year before Joe Montana went to Kansas City, they had Joe Montana, Steve Young, and Elvis Gerback on the sideline.
Yeah.
Like, you're not allowed to do that anymore.
No.
You can't just hoard all of the talent on one team. Do you remember the Jets when they had Ken O'Brien as the quarterback with them ugly green helmets?
Yes.
Al Toon wasn't there anymore. You knew they was going to be garbage every year.
Yeah.
Patriots was garbage. There's the certain garbage teams. Like, I kind of like the product now. Like, I like, you know, the watching the offense and watching teams get blown out by the big things. But now it's really any given Sunday. I love the fact that the St. Louis Rams, when they beat the Colts, I mean, it's because they got talented players and first-round draft picks that was pretty good at the time, too, you know what I mean, on their team. And they could show up on any Sunday. You know what I mean? It could go down. I like the football now because it's not like – how the last caller was saying about basketball with just the best players just winning. And with it's the salary cap number will hold people under.
Also, so you like it more now with all that parity? Because you're actually – and clearly there's people out there because the NFL is more popular than it's ever been. I think I liked it better when there was less parity. I liked it better – I've always been a dynasty fan in every sport. I like dominant teams.
Yeah. But what about the fan – remember the Patriots, they went to a Super Bowl in the 80s. They was garbage.
Tony Eason was a quarterback, yeah.
I mean, they couldn't get talent. Think about, like, with Elvis Gerback, he would have been the starting quarterback. He wouldn't have been third string on San Francisco. He would have went, and that's what goes back to what we were talking about with franchise quarterbacks. I know y'all think it's only like five or six good quarterbacks in the league, but it's 32 good teams in the league. And if, like, a team like the Jacksonville Jaguars could see that they could pay Eli Manning or was the Flacco or Ben Roethlisberger, they would give them that money. That's why the cities that they're at give them that money to keep them there, because it's teams that don't have anything. It's like if you had a side girlfriend or you had a main girlfriend, like you want a main girl that can stay with you, you would pay her $100 million to be in your city. Yeah, I mean, that's what the thing did. And I think 32 teams, the 32 franchises, they should all have a franchise quarterback, you know what I mean? Because it'll follow your system. And when we talk about systems, there's one other thing I want to tell you about the Eagles, because you are on point with everything with Chip Kelly and how he got DeSean Jackson, maybe the number two or three receiver, and Shady's the number one rusher in just this system. He makes people look good. I want you to remember, do you remember any option offenses, watching any type of option offense?
Do I remember watching an option offense? Well, yeah, well, I mean the
Tommy Frazier with Nebraska.
Oh, yeah. You mean college, a college option offense? Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Now think about this: if the defense for the other teams, even a defense that's on a college offense that run the option,
what would the safeties in the secondary be doing in a pure option offense, like how Navy used to run or something like that?
Well, they'd be pursuing the run.
This is the beauty of Chip Kelly offense.
Right.
With him staying in the shotgun formation and running the ball out there, you can't get no keys or heads when the run is coming.
I was getting excited because that's exactly the thing. That's exactly why the quarterback running is so important in Kelly's offense, because it gives you basically a one man advantage in that no matter what the defense does, you have an advantage somewhere, whether that advantage is the quarterback running or whether that advantage is the quarterback throwing or the running back running. There's always the difference between a college option offense, you know, the Navy thing or whatever is a very like dumbed down after the snap version of that. You're making that decision on the fly. The thing about the Kelly offense is basically looking at the defense, realizing where you have that one man advantage. It's only one guy, but when you have that one guy and when your quarterback can move, you always have that advantage.
Let me tell you something else, Spike.
Yes.
When you hurry up, when you add the hurry up element, the teams can't go back and look at the coordinator and ask them what they should do. Like in the Washington game, when Shady McCoy ran that touchdown when he had both his hands extended, it's because the safety said, you know what, I don't know what to do, but I'm going to Deshaun on the right. The play was called a run to the left. He took his own self out to play. When you let players make their own individual thing, they might look at a tendency that's not there. And that's one thing that Nick Foles is doing well, that the quarterback of the future here, remember from back in the day, I told you they had Elvis Gerback as the third string. Like, if we get a quarterback that can run, he can learn some things from Nick Foles on how to look at the defense, read the pre-snap reads, and then exploit them when it's time. Because if you blitz Nick Foles, he's going to hit the hot man. If you give Nick Foles a one-on-one and you want to stop the run, put eight in the box, he's going to exploit it. And that's what making Riley Cooper look good. Before you let me go, me and my man was geeking last night because we were saying, what about Andre Johnson being in this offense?
Oh, my God.
You have 7 men in the box every day of the week. You have no choice but to keep two safeties and two running backs, two safeties and two corners on our receivers. And now you got 7 in the box with Chip Kelly doing whatever he wants. We can work it out with Foles, but that's the beauty of Chip. He can make a passing offense out of this running offense, but now he got the whole package. I wish people could see the insight that, man, you just had, because it's almost unstoppable, man.
Thank you for the call. I'll put AJ on hold. AJ's going to get those Temple tickets. Temple versus UConn Saturday night. I don't know why I said Friday night. Maybe, I don't know. Because Saturday night for me is fighting, not football. All right. Saturday night is all right. Okay. Saturday night, Temple, UConn, primetime showdown. It is at Lincoln Financial Field. Bring a canned food item to the box office on game day. Save money on tickets, and the kids can score a touchdown on the field after the game. Visit alicetix.com. AJ's getting those tickets. Yet the thing about that is what is so brilliant about Chip Kelly. That is what everyone wanted to call it, a gimmick. That is my favorite part, is when they hired Chip Kelly and everyone was ready to call it a gimmick. It's not a gimmick. It's logic. That's all it is. It's logic. And that is the thing that Foles has had over the last 5-6 weeks. And you know what? He had preseason and he had the benefit of reps, you know, leading up to this, and the benefit of watching the games, is consistency. You know, what you need, the best quarterback for Chip Kelly is a guy that is going to be able to be in there every game, learn and get better. That's why I was saying, you know, weeks ago that I wanted everyone else running this offense, because next year, you know, think about, man, they have the leading running back. We've all said the Shady McCoy is very good, but the running back's having a career year. The wide receiver's having a career year. The quarterback's having a career year. Riley Cooper's having a career year. It's unbelievable what's going on with this offense. It's unbelievable. If the talent level is up 20%, it is unbelievable what's going to happen. And what Foles has been able to do, he's been able to stay on the field, been able to be consistent, get a better idea of how to make those right reads. And that ultimately, if there's one thing that Foles has as an advantage over Vic, even though there, I'm sure there's more than one, but ultimately his ability to stay healthy and stay in there every week, and Vic's inability to do that it sealed the deal. I mean, if there was any question, it sealed the deal, because you need to be in there, you need to be learning, you need to be figuring that out. I'm super excited for the future of this football team, and I'm super excited for this year because I think they win the division. I trust in them. Ray does not. Ray is going to explain how the Eagles are going to go 1-4 in their last five games. And Matt is going to somehow sell us on the Sixers building around Spencer Hawes, which is such a bad idea. I have to hear it. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494, pound 9494 on your AT&T and Verizon cell. Those guys are next, and there is time for you as well. I'm Spike Eskin, 94 WIP Sports Time is 116.
As our Sports Radio 94 WIP.
That one's a little maniacal. Big Daddy Graham's coming up at 2. I'm Spike Eskin. It's my pleasure to be here with you this evening. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494. If you missed last segment, you missed me discussing what the best kind of pie is with myself. Pound 9494 on the AT&T and Verizon cell. I think I settled on pecan pie might be the best, but it's unfair to compare it to other fruit pies. Matt in Mount Laurel, you're a 94 WIP, and you have an insane plan that I feel like is going to keep me up all night that involves Spencer Hawes. Matt, please explain this plan to me.
Yes, I can explain it to you. First off, I want to start with the fact that Spencer Hawes is one of six players in the NBA to average above 10 points and above 10 boards.
Okay.
The other players are Blake Griffin, Kevin Love, Dwight Howard, Anthony Davis, and Vucevic.
Okay.
So, therefore, he's in a league category there. He's got the best range out of all of them, of course. He's shooting 50% from the three. He's fine there. He's got athleticism. You see him, if you watch the game tonight, making and ones, jumping into people, banking shots in. And I think if we put the right pieces around him, maybe a point guard, maybe get MCW more experienced, we can get him better shots and even get him more involved to the point where he averages 20 and 10 every night.
Yeah, Matt, I'm not buying it, buddy. Spencer Hawes has played very well this year. I'm pretty proud of myself in that I predicted he would lead the team in 3-point shooting this year. I actually have that written down on CBSPhilly.com. I'm very happy about that. I think it's really helped his game. I think that having that extra space that is created by him standing at the top of the key and being able to hit those shots is really good. I think he's done a nice job rebounding as well. A better job than he's done previously. I don't believe it'll last. I believe that he would be best on a team. If he was on a really talented team, a really talented offensive team, I think he could be a nice asset. But building around a guy like Spencer Hawes is a recipe for 40 wins for the rest of his career. I mean, he's not a guy you build around.
You got to remember how clutch he is. I mean, against the Bulls, he hit that shot.
Matt, you are on air trolling me. There's no way you believe any of this.
I honestly do.
No, you don't. Admit it. I'm not hanging up until you admit it.
I can't admit it. I've watched the Sixers this year.
How clutch he is. What are you, insane?
Over Dwight. He dunked over Dwight to put
Dwight Howard's not even clutch. A bunch of the guys that you brought up, none of them have won anything. You know, all those guys averaging 10 and 10, Blake Griffin, Dwight Howard, Kevin Love. Kevin Love's never even been to the playoffs. You know, they're all nice players, all very good players. But, you know, the stats I see the game. Spencer Hawes has had a nice season, and hopefully he brings back something good in a trade. But you don't build around Spencer Hawes, man. You don't.
Sorry. I just disagree. I mean, we have different opinions.
We do. And hopefully, Matt, let me tell you something. If somehow Spencer Hawes becomes the centerpiece of a contending NBA team, I will bake you a cake. I will come to your house if you want this. I'll bring the ingredients. I'll make you dinner. I'll bake you a cake, and I will do a radio show dedicated in your name.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, thank you, buddy. Dave, write down Matt from Mount Laurel. You don't really have to write it down. We'll never have to worry about it. But trust me, he'll find me if that happens. Spencer Hawes is not the corner piece of a – he could be a nice player on a good team, but I think they'll trade him. Ray in Morristown, you seem like you're going to bum me out a little bit with your Eagles thing here. The last five games, you don't see positive in the last five games. Ray. No. Give Ray another shot, maybe at some other point. Levi. What's up, brother?
Sprite.
Levi.
Listen, let me just say this much.
Yes, sir.
The ideal quarterback for Chip Kelly's offense has got the height of Nick Foles and the mobility of Michael Vick.
Yeah.
That's the ideal quarterback.
He's okay. Cam Newton. Cam Newton's that guy.
Cam Newton would be the guy.
Yeah, okay, Cam Newton's the guy.
Let me just say this much to you. The Eagles sit in a position right now where at 6-5, five games to go, they really set their own destiny as far as how far they go. It's their division to lose right now, not to win. It's their division to lose because they're in first place. They're ahead of the Cowboys right now. You got the Cowboys at the end of the year. They've been a good road team, so that means they should be able to go out to Dallas and win that last game if they have to go out there and win it. Okay, now, all your next five games are all conference games. Can you win three of those games?
I think they can.
I think they can also.
That Minnesota game, they can win. Here's the thing. You got the Minnesota game. I don't want to say it's a lock, but Minnesota's not very good. So let's say they should win the Minnesota game. Then you have Detroit, Arizona, and you have them both here at the link, and
correct.
Then you have Chicago in Chicago. I really think they can take two of those three.
No, Chicago's here also.
They're all here?
Because Chicago's here, Arizona's here, and Detroit is here.
All three of them are here?
Right.
Oh, you're right.
The away games are Dallas and Minnesota.
Then they can win two of those three.
They can win all five, but now I want to lay something out to you.
Yes, sir.
They're going to be in all five of these games. They can be in all five of these games, which is a possibility they can win all five. But I'm looking at what they've done already and where they should be. Now, you take the San Diego game, I give that loss to Chip. The Giant game, I give that loss to Vic. Because the simple fact of the matter, five field goals, you're supposed to still be able to get enough offense to win that game.
Well,
and the Dallas game.
Wait a minute, hold on. The Giants game, Vic only played for a quarter.
That's still, they started off in the tank to start with,
yeah.
Five field goals.
He was hurt, man.
But it was only a hamstring, and the bottom line, nobody touched him, okay?
Levi.
He did that running.
I'm not playing Mike Vick apologist, but I'm not putting that game on him.
I have to.
No!
I have to lay it out like it is. I got one for Chip, I got one for Mike, and I got one for Nick, okay? Nick is the Dallas game. Because had he connected on five passes, they beat Dallas.
Absolutely.
Okay, so now, that gives you nine wins right there with those three, okay? That would be nine. So this team, like I said, this final run, they can be or win all five of these games. Okay, and I'm expecting them to either win or be in all five of these games. I don't see them tanking anything right about now.
No,
I think
they're going to win 9 or 10 games this year. I think they win 9. I really do. I think they win 9 in the division. I really do. And I'm a believer. I don't know what clicked in me, but and maybe it's because, look, sometimes when you want to see something, you see what you want to see. And I've always been a Chip Kelly believer since they hired him. I thought it was a great hire. And even the two games that sucked, the Giants game and the Dallas game, they left points on the board in the Dallas game because Foles had that awful game. And look, the Giants game, you had Matt Barkley and an injured Michael Vick. I've been buying it, and maybe that's why I'm seeing it. But I'm with you, man. I believe that. How many are they going to win? Levi, tell me how many they win.
I started the year off calling, and I said 8-8. Now I have to change that whole philosophy right now.
What do you say?
And I'm looking at least 10 wins.
At least
10.
I love it, man. Thank you for the call. At least 10 wins. That's what I'm... That took me 3.5 hours a show to get somebody finally buying what I'm selling.
Woohoo!
Steve in West Deptford. You got him winning the division too, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm picking up what you're putting down, at least halfway.
Okay.
To put it that way.
All right.
Because I think the irony is going to come when, because I totally agree with what you said about the Sixers and Eagles on the uptick because they're being governed the right way. They got the plan in motion. They got the right, obviously the right coaches. And we trust in the Sixers' brain trust that they're going to pick the right guy no matter what, who they get.
Right.
No matter where they pick. But the irony is going to come because the next champion is going to come between the two, let's say, quote-unquote, clueless teams. And I believe that one will be the Flyers. Because the Phillies, unfortunately, I think they're going to probably have to fall back a little bit before they could take a couple steps forward.
Wait, how do you see the Flyers winning a championship?
Because I really believe that this goalie tandem that they have is going to click one year. And you know in the playoffs in the NHL, you get a hot goalie one year. Edmonton Oilers are the only team that actually did it with two goalies. But I really think one of these two guys will emerge in one of these playoffs coming up in the next couple seasons.
I'll tell you, man, if Emery is Emery, but Mason's been good, he's been great. Unbelievable. Yep.
Absolutely. And you know what? Spike, don't underestimate the fact that these two guys are going to push each other into that number one spot. Just knowing that they're going to have to be a little bit better. Emery is going to give him great competition. Now, I think, unfortunately, the Sixers and the Eagles are in their respective sports that it just is not conducive right now. The Eagles are eventually going to win a Super Bowl, but it could be, another maybe 2-3 years? The Flyers, I think, will get one before that.
Here's the thing. The Sixers, the NBA, I think, is the hardest to win a championship, is the NBA. Because
it's the hardest to win one.
Right.
And once you win one in the NBA, then you can go on and win three or four.
Well, yeah, because if you've won, you're right, there's very few instances. Like the Mavericks were one, they're not going to win another one.
Right.
Occasionally you get the one-offs, but if you win a championship, it usually means you have one of the three or four best players in the NBA.
Exactly.
And if you have one of those, then you hang on to them. So I would disagree with you in that if somebody asked me who is the most likely, the thing with the Flyers, the reason why why you have that on your side is that the eighth seed can win the championship in the NHL. It's just a tournament. But
the hot goalie is the most important. I mean, he's even more important than a quarterback.
Yeah, but I do think the Eagles could do it in the next 3 years. I really do. But
no, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I totally agree with you. The Eagles could do it, but I just think the Flyers may get one in the next couple of years.
Yeah, we'll see. Thank you for the call, Steve. I do agree with you that that Mason has looked great. He's looked great. It's so hard to predict. They say hot goalie because that's what it is. It's a guy who goes on a run sometimes. And a lot of times those guys become good regular season guys after making that run, after that playoff run. So who knows? But you're right. But both Emery and Mason have looked good. But Mason's looked really, really, really good. He's young. That could end up being a really... we've killed Holmgren for a lot of moves, but the trade for Mason and locking him up real quickly, I think, could be one of his good ones. James is saying that Jabari Parker is better than Andrew Wiggins. Chad Ford said that was going to happen, but, we don't know which pick we're going to have anyway. And Dan is going to end the show by telling me that Nick Foles is underrated. Of course. And has a prediction for the Eagles. There's been barely any Nick Foles talk all night, so we have to end it on that. And then Big Daddy Graham's coming up at 2. Want to let you know the 94 WIP game plan, great email newsletter. Get our biggest sports stories. Get the podcasts of all the guests. Contests exclusive to this email. Sign up. Go to cbsphilly.com/gameplan. Xfinity voice line is 888-729-9494. I'm Spike Eskin. 94 WIP. Sports time is 1:36.
Sports Radio 94 WIP.
You are just minutes away from the Big Daddy Graham show. I have inside information that it will be one of the best Big Daddy Graham shows ever on WIP. I have that inside information. I don't want to reveal why. I'll let him do that, but that's coming up next. I am Spike Eskin. James in Souderton has already made his decision. He says Jabari Parker over Andrew Wiggins, right?
No, I'm not. Well, I mean, that's ridiculous, but
Well, looking at the two of them, I mean, he seems more aggressive than Wiggins so far. I mean, it's only a couple game sample here, but.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Do you know who Chad Ford is? So he's this ESPN, if anybody listening does it.
Chris Ford, the old Sixers guy?
I don't think so, but I don't know. I don't know for sure. But Chad Ford is ESPN's draft guy, and he actually said, I was listening to a podcast, you know, before the NBA season started, before the college season started, and he said, in my opinion, Wiggins is the best prospect. He said, but Parker is going to put up better numbers, and he's a flashier player. And he goes, I guarantee you, within the first month of the season, people are going to start talking about Parker over Wiggins. And I remember him saying that. And
then, would you take Michael Jordan or Dominique Wilkins? I mean, who would, you know?
Well,
I think
here's the thing with the two guys. Parker, you're right. I mean, Parker looks way more polished. But I was talking about it with Ike the other day, and of course, Ike likes Jabari Parker, and I like Andrew Wiggins. But he started laughing. He was like, "Well, Ike's a Kobe guy, and I'm a LeBron guy." So the thing about Wiggins is Wiggins sort of he plays within the flow of the game.
More like LeBron type player.
Yeah.
Selfish.
Yeah.
More of a team guy.
And I'm not saying that Parker's selfish, but he's definitely a more ball dominant sort of guy. But he's been amazing to watch.
That guy that talked about building the team around Spencer Halls, I mean, I totally agree with him. I was thinking we should also bring we should bring back the guy who was into the Lakers, Jody Meeks. We'll bring him back.
Yeah, why not?
We'll build a team around Jody Meeks, and that would be awesome.
Yeah, do you have anybody else you'd like to? Do you want to bring Willie Green back while we're at it? Maybe Jason Capono?
He's actually still in the league, I think, Willie Green.
Yeah, he's on the Clippers. He's actually, you know, I always thought the problem with Willie Green here is that he got put into a role he didn't need. He's actually a nice little player for the Clippers.
Seven, eight guy off of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
the other thing is, I just heard your weather forecast. I got to be on a roof first thing in the morning. That really sucks. But I don't know. I don't think we go wrong with Wiggins or Parker. And who would you think would be the third player if we somehow slipped to third?
It's Randall. I think at this point it's Randall. It's funny. It's also, excuse me, it's also early. And we saw last year, you know, even 2 weeks before, 2 weeks before the draft, everyone was saying Nerlens Noel is the number one pick in the draft, and then all of a sudden he went to six. So I don't know who will end up being. Thank you for the call, James. I appreciate it, buddy. I don't know who's going to end up being three, but as of right now, it's Julius Randle, and some people think that Randle will go one. I'm not a big, like, I'm a wing guy, not a front court guy, so that's why Randle's he's tough though, man. He's a strong dude. We will end the evening on Dan, who wants to tell me that Nick Foles is underrated. How so, sir? Dan?
Nick Foles? Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. How is Nick Foles underrated?
Because everybody just keeps talking about definitely drafting a new quarterback and all that nonsense. Man, the guy's played, what, now? He's had 12 starts. I mean, come on, this guy's throwing over 70% against the blitz. And, like, he just makes you pay. He can go through his reads. He's easily hitting his third read when he goes through his progressions. The kid's got intelligence. Then another guy said he couldn't thread the needle. He threw a ball so hard Sunday, I believe it was Zach Ertz, dropped it. He threw it so hard.
Well, I'm not going to cave on the arm strength thing. I don't think I don't think the arm's that strong. I really don't. But, you know, that's I don't know what to tell you. You think it is. I think it's not. You know, we're sort of at a standstill there. We can agree that he's played very well. And he's played great. But I think that you can say he's played great and still think that they can do better. You know, and maybe it's not better in this year's draft. I don't know, but I think eventually they can do better. But, you know, who knows? Who am I to say?
Just for competition's sake, you know, it wouldn't be bad. Now, let me get you my prediction real quick.
Yes.
You ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. I think I would really like to believe 10-6, but I'm going to have to go with 9-7.
Okay.
what I think is, I actually think that the Eagles, for some odd reason, I think they're going to drop the Detroit game.
Okay.
I think that they're going to win the following rest, and I think Dallas is going to become meaningless. I really think they're going to choke down the stretch. Now, the Bears, people would say, oh, well, they beat them in the past. No, this is a different dynamic of an Eagles team. This dynamic that the Eagles have now matches up good with Chicago, and I really believe they're going to give them a lot of trouble.
Well, I'll tell you, as long as weather – the problem with Chicago – the thing with Chicago is that everyone says Chicago. Everyone thinks of Chicago as a very good defensive team, and they're not this year.
Absolutely
so, you know, as long as the weather doesn't get in the way, they can put 40 up on the Bears. I'm not worried about the Bears game. I agree with you. I think they're going to lose.
Arizona.
Yeah, that's a tough defense, man.
That's going to be a tough one against Arizona. I think that the Eagles' defense wins that game. I think Carson Palmer, I think they match up good defensively against particularly him. I really think so, and I think Kendricks will get after him. He'll be back. I think the Eagles record probably maybe their most sacks all season against Carson Palmer. For some reason, I don't know. I really believe they're going to give him a lot of trouble, man. And that Boykin kid, I'll tell you.
He's a player.
He's amazing, man.
Yeah.
Just got to put it on Fitz, man. Put somebody over the top. Let somebody, you know, patrol the underneath of them. And, you know, we'll be all right if the Eagles can basically do that in the way that they need to.
I love the prediction, Dan. Thank you for the call. I think that the real question comes. I think they'll win either the Cardinals or the Lions game. I think they'll lose one. Yeah. I don't think they'll lose both, but both of those games are. Yeah, and I don't think there's any shame in losing to either of those teams. I think they're both good teams. That Cardinals defense is tough. Carson Palmer loves throwing interceptions, though, man. If the Eagles end up with two extra possessions against the Cardinals, there's no way the Cardinals win that game. That comes down to, we will talk after, that game comes down to Carson Palmer turnovers. If Carson Palmer throws two interceptions and the Eagles don't turn, there's no way the Eagles lose that game with extra possessions. And then the Lions game. When we think about how many touchdown receptions Calvin Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald are going to have combined, I mean, I know the defense has played better, but I don't know if there's anybody that can stick either of those guys. Is that Big Daddy Graham over
Hello,
there?
Hello, it's Big Daddy Graham.
Did I
actually hear Willie Green's name?
It did. Well, there was a guy that called up that suggested, I tried to get him to admit that he was kidding, that we build around Spencer Hawes.
Wait a minute. He was trying to convince you of that?
Yes.
And he's having an amazing season. Yep, I mean, he really is. You don't build around the
no.
big. I got to tell you, on a team that's got 8 trillion holes, you might want to look elsewhere to fill stuff than before there. He's not a
well, he's going to be a free agent. So unless you want to pay him $10 million or $8 million, I don't know. But building around him is just the reason the guy brought up Willie Green is because he said, oh, yeah, we'll build around Spencer Hawes and then we'll trade for Jody Meeks. Why don't we do that? And I said, yeah, we'll bring back Willie Green, too.
He's in the league, I think.
Yeah, Willie Green's on the Clippers. He has a nice little role on the Clippers, actually. He's like, you know, a 12, 15-minute a game guy. You know, that's what he always was meant to be.
Are you old enough to remember Willie Burton?
Yeah, absolutely. Didn't he drop 50?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the few Sixers to drop 50. When I think of Willie Burton, I think of Miss Nude Florida, which was either his girlfriend or his wife.
Well, because he was on the Heat, right? Willie Burton was on the Heat before he was here, I think.
I don't remember, but I know this much. I do know this much. This was back... this is in the spectrum, and the media room used to be underneath.
Okay.
Okay, not like, you know, well, it's underneath now, too. What am I saying? It's still underneath.
Yeah, it was underneath. It was right under the press box. You would go down the stairs to the press box, and it was right under there, right? That's where it was.
Yeah, kind of right there.
Yeah.
And I was new to this whole ball game, and there was just an absolutely spectacular-looking woman kind of hanging around out in the corridor, and I couldn't take my eyes off her. And may he rest in peace, it was Phil Jasner, overheard me. I wasn't even talking to Phil Jasner. I was talking to someone else. I said, you know what guys do. Have you seen that out in the hallway? Who, where? Where? No, I'm telling you. Go out the hallway right now and check that out. And Phil Jasner, I can't remember wife or girlfriend, but Phil Jasner said, well, that's Willie Burton's babe. She was Miss Nude Florida.
Okay. Good for Willie
now,
Burton.
Good for Willie Burton, but it opens up a whole lot of stuff to think about there. I was unaware that states sanctioned
Miss Nudes.
Okay. So, of course, we want to meet Miss Nude Pennsylvania. And since we can see Jersey from our studio here, let's meet Miss, you know, Nude.
Well, and if
Miss
you're not
Nude, you can't, I have a hard time saying that. Miss Nude, New Jersey.
Well, and if you're not busy over the weekend, if you want to go see if we can find Miss Nude Delaware, I'm sure she's probably less impressive than Miss Nude Pennsylvania, but
well,
we can go
know.
Try find her. Well, it's a smaller state, I guess.
Less to choose from?
Yes.
Yeah, you just, you know, Oklahoma City's got Kevin Durant, and they're like the tiniest market in the NBA.
Is there a Miss Nude draft that you can luck into getting? Maybe Miss Nude Oregon selected.
I was really flabbergasted by that, you know. And if you were Miss Nude Florida, wouldn't you be nude all the time? Isn't that like the point?
It's proof, right?
I mean, there are Miss Philadelphia's and Miss Pennsylvania's and all that. And
yeah.
I've done various events where people like, you know, where women like that are at. And I usually do have like some sort of tiara or one of those sashes that says, you know, Miss Pennsylvania on it or Miss Philadelphia. Miss Nude Florida needs nothing.
Well, maybe you have the, you know, at concerts, well, you know, during my YSP days, we'd go to Ozfest. Girls would go to the breast painting booth or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe she has it painted on so she can be nude, but she can also display that she's Miss Nude.
Tasteful nudity.
Tasteful.
I think that's what you're getting
at. Well, I mean, the state is sponsoring it, Big Daddy. Clearly, it's going to be tasteful.
I know Jasner was completely wrong, but I always remember him telling me that, Miss Nude Florida, and I went, okay. That's news to me. So you mean to tell me you only took one Nick Foles call? That was it?
Yeah, there was one sort of in the middle. I just like...
Is it dying down now? You know,
well,
the attacks on Spike Eskin?
No, the Twitter never stops. Never, ever, ever. It doesn't. Like, I sometimes I don't even want to look at it anymore. And the frustrating thing is they always go, are you willing to admit you're wrong? And I'll say, okay, about what? About Nick Foles. And I'm like, okay, he was a better choice than Michael Vick. Well, are you willing to admit he should be the quarterback of the future? And I said, no, I don't know why. And I'm not changing my mind that do we have to argue about it again? Can't we just disagree?
But I like it when people phrase it that way.
Are you ready to? Yeah.
Are you willing to admit... You know, people just, you know, love hearing other people admit that they're wrong.
Well, yeah,
and
no one ever remembers when you're right. No one ever, ever remembers when you're
right. And I'm older than you. I find that the type of person that uses that phrase, hey, now you're willing to finally admit that you're wrong. They're the type of people who would not admit that they're wrong in a million years. Okay?
About anything.
About absolutely anything. Anybody who uses that phrase in that way, you know.
Well, you know what I do? See, the best thing, what people forget about Twitter is that everything you have ever said is there for me to see. So if you really
is
get...
Is it really?
Well, I can just go through your Twitter feed. Yeah, absolutely.
So that like the history never kind of like erases itself along the way?
It would, I mean, way, way back. You would have to really go back.
Okay.
So what I'll do is, if somebody really won't leave me alone about it, I'll just go through their Twitter feed, find something they were wrong about, and point it out to them.
Well, I don't do a lot of booking anymore, but I used to book a lot.
Right.
I still do a fair amount of booking. Somebody will call me to do some corporate event or whatever. I can't do it. I go, hey, but, you know, I know somebody who will do a bang-up job, and you know, let me book them for you, and they'll go fine. And then I call first, but then I always email. It's not even a contract. Hey, Spike, what's up? Just reminding you, you know, February 15th, 8 o'clock, you know, Pittman, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll write back, yeah, I got it. And then I'm home free.
It's not your responsibility.
Then at no point anymore, at no point can that person go, you never said it was the 15th.
Let me forward you your reply.
Let me forward. That's one of the great things about it. Great show tonight, Mr. Eskin.
Thank you. And I'm sure Big Daddy Graham's show will be great. As I told you, I have inside information that it will be one of the best he's ever done, but I can't reveal why. Thank you to Adam Regner for producing the first portion of the program, Mark Farzetta for updates, of course, Mr. Dave Uram for producing the always better second half of my program when I have less voice and less sanity. My name is Spike Eskin. You can follow me on Twitter at MV5.
She's always been there for you.
Encouraging you. Believing in you. Every moment, every day.
When you found it hard to believe in yourself, her love for you was like a rock.
Solid. Dependable. Reliable.
Where was